and Benjamin Netanyahu waged a war last June that was gloriously successful and would have rendered Iran incapable of causing any harm to anybody for, I think I remember correctly, generations. And then 9 months later, they had to start another war. But don't worry, because they secured an immediate and glorious victory. Donald Trump was adamant about that. So adamant, in fact, that he not only insulted our own Prime Minister, but insisted that even if we were minded to provide him with some help, he wouldn't need it because they'd already won. And then we fast forward to today, when apparently they didn't notice where the Strait of Hormuz was, and they are begging for help from NATO allies that they'd previously alienated. I think that's it.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Prime Minister is to set out plans to help households with the cost of living as energy prices spike due to the war in the Middle East. Keir Starmer is expected to say later that helping families is his first priority. It's thought the announcement will contain special measures for people using oil to heat their homes. LBC's political editor Natasha Clarke has more details.
He will lay out this morning plans to help with tens of millions of pounds. They will specifically be for poorer households. So they won't be for everyone, but they will, as you say, be to help with the cost of heating oil. And we know that they have had their prices spiked the most in the last couple of weeks because of the price cap, which keeps things down for people on most normal sort of other types of energy. Oil and gas has been spiking. The cost of crude oil has jumped above $100 a couple of times now.
A cabinet minister says the UK is in constant dialogue with President Trump after he called for help to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. Iran has effectively closed the strait, which is a key route for global oil supplies. Mr. Trump has warned that NATO faces a very bad future if members fail to help with his request. The Work and Pension Secretary Pat McFadden was asked on LBC this morning whether the UK could send ships to police the strait.
I don't want to rule in or out particular military assets. That would be a matter for the Prime Minister and the President to discuss. Of course, it's in everybody's interest for oil and gas to flow freely and for energy prices to come down. Our decisions will always be informed by what's in Britain's national interest. That starts with not being a protagonist in this war. But of course, we'll do what we can to protect our citizens and our military assets in the region too.
A 43-year-old woman has been charged with murder following the death of an 18-day-old baby in London. Police were called to a residential property in Westminster on Saturday after reports a child had fallen from a height. The baby girl died in hospital. Antibiotics are being provided for some students at the University of Kent in Canterbury following an outbreak of meningitis. Two people have died, 11 others are seriously ill in hospital. And employers are to be paid to hire young people in an effort to bring down the rising number who are not in work, training or education. The government has promised £1 billion in support and says the new deal aims to create 200,000 new jobs. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 9 points at 10,270. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, a dry morning for most, but widespread rain again by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting, like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after ten, and well, I know that I'm right because he said so.
The beginning, it's the beginning of building a new country, but they certainly, they have no navy, they have no air force.
It's all over. The war is over. He told us that it was. So, things that you need to know about early doors today. I think the first is that NATO is a defensive alliance. This is something that has been ridden roughshod over by various liars and traitors to the Western cause. When people like Nigel Farage talk about NATO threatening Russian interests in places like Ukraine, they are being both liars and traitors, because they are parroting Kremlin propaganda, although Nigel Farage, as far as we are aware, has never been paid for doing so, unlike his close friend and former protege Nathan Gill. But they are also completely misrepresenting what NATO is. It is a defensive alliance. So if an act of attack, if an act of offence is taken against a NATO member, then it triggers the article that prompts all NATO members to join in the response. The United States of America, the only NATO member, I think in recent memory, if not ever, to have triggered, I think, Article 5. And therefore, we sent many, many troops to Afghanistan, of course, including the hundreds that died from the United Kingdom, the ones that Donald Trump insulted not that long ago. I think it was in January of this year, but I could be wrong, actually. Let us refresh our memories about what Donald Trump said, both about NATO and about dead British servicemen and women, as long ago as earlier this year.
I've always said, will they be there if we ever needed them? And that's really the ultimate test. And I'm not sure of that. I know that we would have been there, or we would be there. But will they be there? And let's hope that that never happens. We've never needed them. We have never really asked anything of them. You know, they'll say they sent some troops to Afghanistan or this or that. And they did. They stayed a little back, a little off the front lines.
Do you know, how many times have I played that to you recently? I played it at the time. A few times, and I've played it to you subsequently, and I mean, I'm almost reassured by the fact that my fury at listening to that hideous human being malign the memories of our war dead in that way is absolutely undimmed. You worry when you do this for a living sometimes that your sensitivities will ossify, that you'll grow a sort of suit of psychological armour that inures you to the horrors of what's happening in front of you. But say what you like about Donald Trump, he manages to cause profound and hideous offence, even on the 10th, the 20th, the 30th time of hearing. That I'm going to play it to you again, because it is absolutely intrinsic to what is happening now and the conversation that we are about to have today.
I've always said, will they be there if we ever needed them? And that's really the ultimate test. And I'm not sure of that. I know that we would have been there, or we would be there. But will they be there? And let's hope that that never happens. We've never needed them. We have never really asked anything of them. You know, they'll say they sent some troops to Afghanistan or this or that. And they did. They stayed a little back, a little off the front lines.
Ah, man, they stayed a little back off the front lines. 457. Some confusion over that figure on this program, because of the 457 dead, 405 were due to hostile action, 52 to non-combat injuries, illness or accidents, which means they may not have happened in the actual theatre of war. And that's why some people go with the figure 454, but this is relatively moot. It boils my blood every time I hear it, because, of course, we are turning our attention back to Donald Trump and NATO today, because he is insisting or demanding or threatening that NATO help him police the Straits of Hormuz. This despite the fact that he was claiming last week, literally claiming last week, and we can only find this on his social media posts. We haven't managed to find audio of this. I don't think it exists. Claiming last week that not only had the victory been achieved, but it was so complete that they wouldn't need any help from the United Kingdom, even if the United Kingdom's help was forthcoming. This was when he insulted Keir Starmer, our democratically elected Prime Minister, by Donald Trump comparing someone unfavourably, a draft dodger, multiple draft dodger, comparing somebody unfavourably to Winston Churchill. You look, and if it wasn't for all the cheerleaders in this country who are so far up Donald Trump's backside that you can only see their toes, then I wouldn't obsess about it. But that's part of the problem that we have. Find me a Donald Trump supporter who didn't also support Brexit, and I'll find you an anomaly. But I mention Brexit only because it highlights how hard these people, these clowns, these idiots find it to climb down from a position that they had previously adopted, despite all the evidence amassing that they have been hideously and horribly wrong again. And here we are. What did I say to you 2 weeks ago? Well, possibly 1 week ago. I said to you that Donald Trump will claim victory even when no victory has been achieved. What we don't know is what happens next when events conspire to create an impossibility for that claim to sustain. I'm not exaggerating. He has claimed complete victory. He has claimed a generational success, not just this time round, but last June as well. And he has claimed that he doesn't need any help from anybody. He has insulted NATO. He has insulted the United Kingdom. He has insulted Keir Starmer. And now he is insisting, demanding, threatening allies, previous allies that he has successfully alienated, with demands that they join him in policing the Strait of Hormuz without even really knowing what that means. It's also feasible, and again, I can't quite believe that I am required to say this out loud, it's also feasible that they didn't know what they were doing when they started this war, or that they didn't know where the Strait of Hormuz was or what significance it held in the Middle East. You create a vacuum, anything can move into the available space. And remember, it's only a fortnight since they were queuing up to attack Keir Starmer for not joining in. Absolutely extraordinary. Here's the US Energy Secretary, Chris Wright, speaking with NBC over the weekend, just on that question of how on earth this could have happened. And you could be forgiven here for detecting the ghost of Dominic Raab.
Very quickly, Mr. Secretary, there's a big debate over whether you all were prepared for what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz. If you were prepared, why is the Strait of Hormuz effectively closed right now?
Because it's right near the Iranian shoreline. The world is abundantly supplied with oil and energy. We knew there would be a short-term disruption in energy flows. And to hear Chuck Schumer say that we didn't, it's just so he knows how foolish that is. And to say stuff to try to undermine the United States in the midst of a world-changing conflict just boggles my mind. But this mission was carefully planned out. It's been superbly executed. On the other side, we'll be in a much better place. The greatest driver of terrorism in the world, the greatest threat to global energy supplies, will be defanged. Yes, we have disruption to get there, but we're going to be in a much, much better place in the not-too-distant future.
Of course we are. We just didn't realise that the Strait of Hormuz was just off the Iranian coast. Reminds me of Dominic Raab only realising how much trade there was between Dover and Calais after he had become Secretary of State for Brexit. It's another bit as well. Well, there's two bits that are relevant to what you just heard that clown say. The first is that they are threatening to attack media organisations for reporting the facts. So you pick up on that word, undermining the American interests. So if America do something and it's a disaster and you report it accurately, you are undermining the American war effort. This is Kremlin-esque. Make no mistake, this is the kind of totalitarian attempts to control media and government institutions that Viktor Orban has introduced in Hungary, that Vladimir Putin has presided over in Russia, and now you have Donald Trump and his key cronies essentially threatening the media for correctly reporting the facts if the facts demonstrate that they are a bunch of idiots. I think it's worth perhaps listening to that again on the question of how they've ended up in such an almighty mess, but not yet, because... Well, I think by the standards of idiocy and double talking, Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary on Fox News this weekend, probably, and it's a crowded field, but she probably takes the cake. Listen to this.
Americans are obviously seeing a temporary increase in gas prices as Iran is, you know, trying to impede movement there in the Strait of Hormuz. We're now utilizing our strategic petroleum reserve. This is what it is supposed to be used for, right? This is the time whenever a president taps it, not as they're going into an election like we've seen in the past, but what is your message to people out there in the country right now who might be concerned to see this blip and this increase in gas prices?
We understand your concerns. We hear you, and we are taking them into account, and we have a plan to address them. And this is a temporary short-term disruption in global oil prices that the president is ultimately going to rectify by wiping out the rogue Iranian terrorist regime. And the fact that the terrorists are holding the global oil industry hostage by threatening to shut down the Strait of Hormuz and traffic through the strait just underscores the need for President Trump to launch this operation in the first place. We cannot live in a world where we have radical Islamic terrorists threatening to hold the world's oil market and global economy hostage like this. So the Trump administration in the short term to address the rise in oil prices has rolled out a plethora of solutions to address this issue, providing political risk insurance to oil vessels and tankers moving through the strait. The president and commander in chief has said that he's willing to use the U.S. Navy to escort ships if and when necessary, when the military deems appropriate to do so. We've waived some sanctions for sanctioned oil that's already at sea to kind of stabilize the prices. And then, of course, as you mentioned, the release of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which this president takes very seriously and is doing responsibly, unlike the last administration, who abused the SPR for political reasons to try to artificially lower gas prices ahead of an election. That was despicable. This president takes it very seriously. We will refill the SPR.
And of course, people still buy this. People still swallow this. I Lewis Goodall had a guest on his show yesterday that you've sent me clips of. I wasn't listening live because I had... I was busy, but the way in which people have to turn themselves into, I don't know quite what the correct word would be, but turn themselves into some very, very ugly things to pretend that this isn't all a disaster when the evidence is there on tape from his own words. He already destroyed 100% of Iran's military capability, and yet they need help from NATO to bolster the US Navy in the Gulf in order to keep the Strait of Hormuz open to supertankers. So if you've destroyed 100% of Iran's military capability, what are you scared of? And if you've won the war and you don't need any help, why are you asking for help? And if NATO is a defense organization, why are you asking it to join you in an illegal attack? And as you just heard from Caroline Leavitt there, the reason why Iran is doing this is because America attacked it. But America attacked Iran because Iran would do this if Iran was attacked. I'll just run that by you once more, because the logic is sometimes a little bit hard to unpick, but your ears are not deceiving you. You just heard one of Donald Trump's key cronies argue that the reason why Iran is... hindering passage through the Strait of Hormuz for American vessels and American allies is because the United States of America attacked Iran. And the United States of America attacked Iran because if Iran was attacked, they would hinder the passage of vessels through the Strait of Hormuz. Do you want to have a go at unpicking that and sounding a little less ridiculous or dangerous than that person? So you attacked Iran, why? Oh, but because we attacked them, because if we attack them, they will... hinder the Strait of Hormuz. But I just heard your energy secretary display ignorance of where the Strait of Hormuz was. It sounded like he'd been taken by surprise by geography. He'd been taken by surprise by what is on every map that has ever been printed. Yes, well, the reason why we had to attack them was because of what they would do if we attacked them. Oh, I see. And what have they done now? They've done the thing that we thought they would do if we attacked them, except we didn't actually see it coming. Look, I work for Donald Trump. There'll be another guy along in a minute who'll say the exact opposite of what I've said, and then we'll just find out who's in favour with the Mango Mussolini this morning. Because today it could be me, claiming that we know exactly what we're doing, and we did it because we knew what they would do, and we had to do it because of what they would do, which they've now done, and we can't deal with it on our own, so we need lots of help to undo the thing that we've done because we knew what they would do if we did the thing that we did. And then tomorrow someone else will be along to say, oh, who knew? The Strait of Hormuz, eh? Whew, who saw that coming? Near Iran, you say? Oh, well, I mean, you can't blame us for not knowing that. We might be the most powerful military in the history of humanity, but we don't know how to read a map, lads. Come on, give us a break. We got rid of all the map readers during Elon Musk's Doge cuts. We don't need map readers. Maps are woke. Maps are woke. Everybody knows maps are woke. We don't need maps. We just need NATO, except we don't need NATO, because he said that last week. And then this week, we really need NATO. And next week, NATO, NOTO, who even knows-o? And that's where we are. And you know what the question is? What should Keir Starmer do? 0345-6060973. Should he get involved now? Should he accept this demand, this blackmail from Donald Trump, who was previously insulted? Every British service member of the British armed forces who died in Afghanistan. Well, man alive, I haven't set the phone in up yet. I'll do that after this. But the question essentially hinges on one crucial point. One crucial point, okay? And it's this. sometimes these questions are answered because Donald Trump is Donald Trump, because of the fact that Donald Trump is Donald Trump. So why did Keir Starmer not get involved the first time? Because Donald Trump is Donald Trump. And there was clearly no plan. There was clearly no exit route. There was clearly no established political objective. There was clearly no idea of how it was going to end. And there was almost certainly no legal rationale for doing it. And then the story changes because Iran retaliates. So Keir Starmer has to answer a different question, which is, should the UK get involved despite the fact that Donald Trump is Donald Trump? First question answered because Donald Trump is Donald Trump. Second question answered despite the fact that Donald Trump is Donald Trump. And now, should NATO get involved or should the UK get involved in keeping the Strait of Hormuz open to supertankers? In other words, should the UK come to the rescue of the United States despite the fact that Donald Trump is Donald Trump? It's 20 minutes after 10. And remember, Richard Littlejohn has never been more ashamed to be British than when Keir Starmer didn't get involved in this. Daniel Hannan thinks it's the biggest disaster since Suez. The Daily Telegraph and the Daily Mail and some broadcasting outlets are absolutely full of people who 2 weeks ago were adamant that Keir Starmer had got this horribly wrong, that Donald Trump was a Hannibal for our ages, and that the war would be over just as quickly and just as effectively as it was last June, when they claimed that the war had been spectacularly won. But also remember, a lot of them have now started talking about lollipop ladies.
LBC.
From rusty chains to fancy frames and everything in between, sign up for British Heart Foundation's iconic London to Brighton bike ride. Because it's not your wheels, it's how you use them. Whether you're a brand new rider or seasoned pro, challenge yourself this June and make your ride matter with British Heart Foundation. And you won't need any fancy gear, just your helmet and your bike. Sign up today, search London to Brighton Bike Ride and keep us beating.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know your furry friends get up to all kinds of mischief. Like when the dog scuffed that entire chocolate cake. Or the time the cat tested his 9 lives from the curtain rail. Again. That's why we're here when it matters most, with fuss-free pet insurance policies, including unlimited video call access with First Vet. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
It's hard to concentrate when you can't shake a health worry. It can feel like there's a wall between you and the rest of the world, like you can't be fully present.
Hello, AXA Health. How can I help?
If something's playing on your mind, AXA Health support line nurses and counsellors are ready to listen day or night. For cover that cares, search AXA Health Insurance. 24/7 health support line available to all members. Treatment for pre-existing conditions is not covered.
Dread.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's a week since Donald Trump was sneering at Britain for putting HMS Dragon on readiness to deploy to the Mediterranean. It's less than a week since Kemi Badenoch said that she would have sent it there despite the fact that it didn't have any weapons on it. Natasha Clark suggested that perhaps they could have filled it up with potatoes. Kemi Badenoch, another one of those people that will never admit they were wrong, never take a step back from the position that they adopted without understanding anything. And the other allies, Japan, South Korea, France included, are acknowledging Donald Trump's plea for help while pledging simply to monitor the situation. No ships have been committed. And, of course, we know that the government, after Ed Miliband's interview yesterday, is considering the dispatch of ships and mine-hunting drones to help keep the bottleneck open. And that's the question. This is the first time, I hope this doesn't sound more conceited than usual, this is the first time I've been truly up the Swanee, because you could see it was insane to get involved. You could see that once Iran started retaliating against our allies and our own positions, then any half-decent UK Prime Minister would have to respond, would have to change the position of not being involved at all after attacks were launched against us and our allies. And I think you'll agree that over the course of the last 2 weeks, our callers and your humble correspondent have successfully described and predicted every single twist and every single turn of this, up to and including the prediction that he would claim victory when there was no evidence of victory. I think I said it would be the world's first ever vibes-based war, where the vibes were entirely based upon what Donald Trump was saying, because yesterday he'd have said something different, and of course today he reserves the right to say something completely different tomorrow. But of course, there are moments when you can't chalk everything up to his personal depravity and bankruptcy, intellectual and moral bankruptcy, not the multiple actual bankruptcies that he endured before he became president. There are things that are so important that you don't get to swerve them. You can't send me messages, and to be fair, you haven't today, saying, why don't we just ignore him at moments like this? 20% of the world's oil makes its way through the Strait of Hormuz. It's going to impact on everything for countries that are millions or thousands of miles away. I want you to tell me why you think Starmer should either stay out of it or get involved in this very specific engagement. If we did it, by the way, it would denude our own defences in the Atlantic. The Royal Navy is not in very good shape. Every rock I look under when I try to work out what I think about this yields 5, 6, 7 more rocks. The idea that it's an easy question to answer, I'm afraid, is naive. The idea that you and I are qualified to answer it in a meaningful and substantive way is ambitious. It's the first time since we started discussing all of this that I have felt that little frisson of fear that we are kind of just wasting our time, because none of us know enough to know what we think should happen next. But I think we know enough, and there's every possibility, as often happens on days like today, that you already know a lot more than I do. So draw on whatever it is you need, draw on whatever it is that you have to tell me whether or not Keir Starmer, having been belittled and insulted, and we're still subject to these ludicrous tariffs, whether or not Keir Starmer's duties to the national interest are best served by joining Donald Trump in his hideous exercises in Iran, or telling him to sling his hook. Perhaps you can describe some sort of diplomatic middle ground. And that's the phone-in today. My apologies, genuine apologies, for not getting to it sooner, but we got there in the end. Should Keir Starmer, in the national interest, and that's a nuanced picture, because doing anything that Donald Trump wants us to do, in the certain knowledge that he will insult us tomorrow, absolutely certain knowledge that even if you handed him everything he asked for on Monday, by Tuesday tea time, he could be absolutely insulting you and your war dead. Not just you, but your actual war dead. So that's the national interest. These moments are impossible to pin down, but that's what I'm asking you to do. How should Keir Starmer respond to Donald Trump's demands for help in the Strait of Hormuz? The number you need is 03456060973. And if you hit those numbers now, you will get through. Open, safe and free is Donald Trump's ambition. He appears to have clocked that America's Navy is unlikely to be sufficient to do that himself. He is demanding help from NATO allies that he has very recently belittled and insulted and insisted that he didn't need any help from. All of these things are true, but they are not necessarily enough to lead us inexorably to the conclusion that NATO allies, up to and including Keir Starmer, should tell him to get stuffed. Julian's in Maidenhead. Julian, what would you like to say?
Good morning, James.
Hello, mate.
I'd like to say I totally understand the dilemma that Starmer is facing, and you summed it up brilliantly with the because it's Trump and it being Trump, that dichotomy, totally understood. You make a brilliant point. I think that Britain should respond, but only in concert and in tandem with the other countries. On our own, as you said, we're not the fighting force of maybe 40 years ago or 50 years ago or 100 years ago when we ruled the seas. We're no longer at that capacity any longer. So on our own, I don't think we can make as much of a difference. I also think that we should not be doing this, helping out America directly, as in on our own, in tandem with the other countries that recently showed a unity in saying, no, there's the line, you crossed it, we're not having this discussion. So if Canada, Australia, the European Union, the United Kingdom, and other countries come together and say, what do we want out of this? Trump is transactional.
Sorry, I'm just making noises like a performing seal.
That.
No, you're very. I'm fine.
Thank you.
I am absolutely fine. Do you know what? I was internally debating whether or not I was interrupting you too soon, but I find that word transactional fascinating. I don't know if it's true anymore. And it made sense, and it denudes him of morality, of course. Everything is about the quid pro quo. But I don't think he is transactional. I think you can give him all the quids and you won't get any quo in return. Look at the state visit. We rolled out the red carpet 10 minutes later. He's insulting all of us.
That's not a transaction.
What is it? Talk to me about the transaction in place here then.
So if you want our assistance in
don't
this...
Don't say, are you okay again like that? It makes me giggle. Stop it.
I beg your pardon?
I said, don't say, are you okay like that again? When I start making silly noises on the programme, otherwise we'll be here all day.
I'm concerned, James.
I know you
concerned.
Are, and I'm touched. Back to the transaction.
I'm hearing a friendly voice suffering, and I'm concerned. What should I do? Ignore you in your time of need?
You sound like James. Donald Trump now. You sound like Donald Trump. Go on, transaction.
Don't judge me by Donald Trump's... own lack of empathy for somebody who's choking in the White House. I'm not like that, James.
Of course you're not. Transactions.
So if he wants assistance, he can't call upon NATO to do this because it's not part of the NATO treaty to help a buddy out who's decided to go to war without telling anybody. That's not what NATO is about. NATO is a defense organization. Somebody attacks you, everybody defends you.
Yeah.
That was the purpose. So... you want to discuss, this is not NATO, but you want to talk about our assistance? Come meet us in a place where we can discuss this, and we'll plan this together, because you guys evidently haven't.
The only
thing that he's done is listened to Israel, basically, to Israel deciding to go and do this. And he has decided to create an almost NATO-parallel organization, this time, but with Israel. We're not in that organisation.
On the board of peace. Well, Tony Blair is there. You've made me a little bit late for the news, but thank you. It's a nice tee up. The problem, of course, is this. And if we were to oversimplify, or at least to simplify, possibly not oversimplify, if you want to actually get the Strait of Hormuz back up and running as it was all those 3 weeks ago, you just stop attacking Iran. But the question, and while Julian is right to bring Israel into the conversation, the question is whether or not Donald Trump has the agency to stop Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm not sure he does. Certainly under the original reading for the entire war that Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, provided, they only did it because they couldn't stop Benjamin Netanyahu from doing it on his own. So they thought they better get involved in order to be something, 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 something. So, I mean, how do you get this to stop? How do you defuse this situation? Stop bombing Iran? Probably. But I don't know if he's capable of doing that. It is 10:32. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
Sir Keir Starmer is to set out plans to help households with the cost of living as energy prices spike due to the war in the Middle East. It's thought the announcement will contain special measures for people using oil to heat their homes. President Trump has questioned the future of NATO if US allies fail to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz. The key shipping lane in the Gulf has effectively been shut by Iran, cutting off around a fifth of global oil supplies. And it's emerged that a teenager at a sixth form in Faversham is one of two people who've died following a meningitis outbreak. The other person was a student at the University of Kent, with 11 others thought to be seriously ill in hospital. LBC weather, a dry morning for most, but widespread rain again by the afternoon, a high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
Come in, everyone ready?
Exciting!
Remembering how to prepare for a road trip is as easy as spelling it. T is for top-up, like fuel, oil and screen wash. R is for rest, taking a break every 2 hours. I is for inspect, like your tyre pressure and tread. P is for prepare, being prepared for any weather. T-R-I-P. Remember that, and you're ready for a safe trip.
Are we ready?
Yes, Mum.
National Highways.
Aye. I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right.
Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
Hi, I'm Sava, founder of Cool You. And when it comes to getting aircon into London's hot and stuffy apartments and listed buildings, I'm the daddy. For years, Cool You have supplied and installed fully internal aircon systems with no mess, no fuss, and no external condensers. So head to coolyou.london today. Cool You, for a cool, comfortable home.
Cancer doesn't care about childhood. It doesn't care what they miss out on or how much you want to protect them. But we do. At Great Ormond Street Hospital Charity, we fund life-saving research, vital family support, and the special things that help seriously ill kids be kids. Until no childhood is lost to cancer. Join us. Search GOSH Charity.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
We've already won in many ways, but we haven't won enough.
We've already won in many ways, but we haven't won enough. We don't need any help from anybody, but if they don't help us, then the future will be really bad for NATO. What is NATO? It's a defensive alliance. What's he asking NATO to do? Be part of an illegal offensive action against Iran. Why is the Strait of Hormuz shut for 2 weeks? Well, because America and Israel are bombing Iran. Well, was it open 3 weeks ago before they started bombing Iran? Yes, it was. Well, how'd you get it to open again? Probably you stopped bombing Iran. Keir Starmer's giving a speech at Downing Street at the moment, holding a news conference in which he is scripted to say that ending the war is the quickest way to reduce the cost of living. That's just true. The cost of living's gone up because the Strait of Hormuz has been effectively shut for a fortnight. And the energy secretary in the United States of America was taken by surprise by the geography. They didn't realise that the Strait of Hormuz was just off the Iranian coast. At least that is the only viable conclusion to take away from an interview that he gave to NBC at the weekend. If you want to hear it, you can rewind live radio, although I'll probably replay the clip a little later. And, for a little bit of light relief, if you think that that's impossible and that there's no earthly way you could rise to such an esteemed position in one of the most powerful administrations in the history of humanity, then I'd like to introduce you to Dominic Raab, former Conservative politician in this country who was appointed to the heady role of Secretary of State for Brexit, shortly after which he announced that he'd been completely surprised by the amount of trade that went on between Calais and Dover. Because it didn't change his mind about supporting Brexit. Being ignorant of something as intrinsic and important as that didn't change his mind about supporting Brexit. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. You find me an idiot who has been cheerleading for Donald Trump since day one and I'll show you a Brexit supporter. And what the psychological link between those two positions is, apart from the racism, I do not know. I really don't. 10:37 is the time. But I do know this. Starmer faces yet another dilemma. And the twin horns of that dilemma are thus, join in or don't join in. Or join in very specific circumstances, quite neatly laid out under one reading of events by Jonathan in Maidenhead a moment ago. What about you? I listen, with the caveat and the confession that I am not confident in my understanding in the way that I have been for the last 2 weeks. I am not fully confident in my understanding of all the moving parts that are now in place. But my instincts and what knowledge I have leads me to the conclusion that Starmer should do as little as he possibly can, up to and including, or down to and including, nothing at all. Because Donald Trump is an idiot. He is a dangerous, delinquent idiot. We can dress it up as much as we want. We can talk about compromat. We can talk about Epstein. We can talk about the absence of a plan. We can talk about Benjamin Netanyahu having Donald Trump for reasons I don't fully understand or necessarily agree with, but Marco Rubio seemed to suggest that Netanyahu has him by the short and curlies. But all of that gets filed under idiot. He is an idiot. He is a dangerous, delinquent idiot. who is now waging war in one of the world's most historically volatile tinderboxes, with no legal rationale, no plan, and no end objective. So should we get involved at all? 03456060973. Paula is in Gainsborough. Paula, what would you like to say?
Oh, hello, James.
Hello,
thank
Paula.
You for taking my call. This is the second time I've been brave enough to phone in.
I'm very flattered. Thank you, Paula.
I think Starmer is going to have to get involved, but in a very limited way, because I think we are quite exposed to all the ripple out effects of the mess that has been created by the US, sadly. And I don't think we're going to be able to stay completely out of it for very long. We've got interest, obviously, in making sure that the oil can flow through that area. If one of these oil ships were to be struck and all that oil spilled out, there'd be a massive environmental problem. But we'd also be exposed in ways I'd never considered before. But things like Lloyd's of London being, you know, a massive shipping insurer, if they're taking a big hit, what's that going to do to our economy? We would see people being hurt. And
On that final point, I don't think it would do a lot. It would be Lloyd's names who were on the hook for, well, it would have an impact, yeah. Of course it would. But I mean, it's not a reason to send British personnel to the Gulf, is it? I mean, this idea that we have no choice, that's not true. Because Donald Trump could stop now, and the Strait of Hormuz would essentially reopen. There's one unknown known, which is Benjamin Netanyahu, and the possibility that he'd carry on battering Iran anyway. And we've seen by his actions in Gaza how little regard he has for either international law or human life, or, of course, the world. The world's interests, the international interests, as opposed to his own very narrow political objectives. But if Trump gets no help at all, he either has to stop or he has to escalate. And he can't really escalate in the Strait itself, because the US Navy, as I understand it, is incapable of doing this alone. So then he sends troops into it? I mean, I don't know what an escalation looks like in the absence of help. But the more I talk about it, the more I think about it, the more I don't want Keir Starmer to be involved at all.
I don't want him to be. I just got an awful feeling that there's going to be a domino effect. I can't read this. I can't work out how on earth this is going to play out. But what I do know is, for all America's military might, what they lack is wisdom in how to actually use it, and particularly this administration. I would not be surprised if they put troops on the ground, and that would be an escalation. I wouldn't be surprised if they thought they could just carry on bombing everything and hope that would make Iran submit. They're not going to. I heard somebody, and I apologize, I don't know who said it, but somebody said, all Iran needs to do is survive this, and they've won.
Yeah.
And that's the scary point. They just need to survive. That's all they need
to
do.
And they've got entire infrastructure in place for dealing with precisely this this scenario. The press conference is underway. We didn't cross to it live because it is mostly about the provision of support for people who have their fuel delivered, people whose homes are heated by oil. Obviously, questions have come in focusing upon this particular element of the current situation. Natasha Clark is there for LBC, so the plan was always to catch up with her. I'm keeping one eye on that screen and two ears on Paula's contribution. So I can tell you that Keir Starmer, in a slight echo of what Jonathan in Maidenhead said 20 minutes ago, that we are working, the UK is working with other countries, including in Europe, to develop a viable collective plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. And that is close to trolling, because there hasn't been a viable collective plan in place from Donald Trump since this whole sorry saga started.
No, and when I rang before, I said, you know, they've done this, but I don't think they thought it through. And I think this is now coming to pass. You know, everyone has collectively said there's no real proper strategy here. And that's becoming increasingly visible and undeniable now, I suspect.
Except it's not. It's never undeniable, Paula, because you're talking about Donald Trump. So he will literally deny the evidence of the nose on his own face. Don't make me quote Orwell. Oh, too late. Oh, the party told you to ignore the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most terrible command. And I can tell you that in the United States now, the Trump administration is threatening broadcasters for doing journalism. This was always on the card since they introduced fake news into the lexicon and since Kellyanne Conway talked about alternative facts. You have headlines now describing the disaster of Americans' engagement, and you have newspapers like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal reporting facts, reporting events, and you now have Donald Trump's administration, mostly the Federal Communications Commission Chair Brendan Carr, posting on social media about how they risk losing their licenses if they continue to report what he calls fake news, but what everybody else would call news. Because that's always what fake news was. The liars called the truth fake news. And now the people reporting the truth not only stand accused of reporting fake news, but they stand accused of, they face the risk of losing their broadcast licenses entirely. But remember, many, many people have never been more ashamed to be British than when Keir Starmer declined to get involved in this. Daniel Hannan, the world's wrongest man, compared it as an international humiliation akin to Suez. And all of these people still get paid for their opinions. Unlike my callers, who so far today have proved themselves to be approximately 765,000 times brighter than every columnist currently offering their opinions on this subject in the Daily Mail, the Daily Telegraph, the Daily Express, or on some broadcast outlets.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
The Petrol Retailers Association have got some explaining to do here. It isn't good enough to just say, oh, well, you don't understand how the petrol market works, you don't understand how our pricing works, we're operating at razor-thin margins. What people see is a war in the Middle East, and the prices rise immediately at the pumps. And that's on oil that hasn't yet been purchased and is using oil that has already been bought and stored. And it doesn't make sense, other than to think that these retailers are ripping you off. And I think the government's right to point that out.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fools governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg, flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King at London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
Serious about the right vitamins for you and your family? Trust Vitabiotics, the UK's number one vitamin company, for expert nutritional care for every age and lifestyle. Vitamins for everyone, including well man, well woman, well baby and well kid. From Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com. For number one verification, see Vitabiotics.com.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60 973.
There needs to be a viable collective plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. That's something that Keir Starmer will involve himself in, along with allies, including European countries. But he has no interest in joining the wider war. All of this currently being discussed at Downing Street in the context of the support that he is offering to families regarding fuel prices. And now he's started taking questions from journalists, the first of which, actually, from Chris Mason of the BBC, straddled both of those points. I'm going to cross live now because, well, this is the juicy bit, frankly, and it would be nice to listen to it as it happens.
To commit the Royal Navy now to keeping the Straits of Hormuz open. I think you're saying no to that. Is that right? And then, separately, you'll have seen the picture that ITV published of Epstein with Mandelson and the former Prince Andrew in their dressing gowns. Why, in Jonathan Powell's words, did you rush that appointment, given that Karen Pearce was prepared to stay for a few months, and that's what the US president wanted?
Let me deal with the Straits of Hormuz, because obviously that's one of the pressing issues of the day. It's something I discussed with President Trump yesterday on the phone. There have been discussions going on in relation to a viable plan. We want to make sure that involves as many partners as possible. That's been our stated objective here, particularly talking to European partners, inevitably talking to Gulf partners and to the US, because we need a credible, viable plan if we can. And as I said a moment ago, this is, to say the least, not easy. It is not straightforward, and therefore we have to make sure that we've got that credible plan in place. As to what the precise options are, as I say, mine hunting systems of ours are already in the region. We've already spoken about what we can do in relation to anti-drone capability. But this isn't just about what the UK can do. It's about how we play a part in bringing others together behind a viable plan. So that's where we're at the moment. Well, we're looking through the options. It is difficult, of course. It's difficult. There's no hiding that. But that's what we're working on in terms of a viable plan, because ultimately we need to get the Straits opened. Otherwise, the price of energy will remain very high for reasons that everybody understands. So it's part and parcel of what we're doing on the cost of living. In relation to Mandelson, look, the independent advisor has looked at the tail end of last week at the process we went through, and he said it was the proper process. Look, the process wasn't strong enough, and that's why last year I moved to strengthen the process, and we'll strengthen it again. My reflection is the process wasn't strong enough. The process was followed, but was the process strong enough? No, it wasn't. Now, I recognise that back in September when the Bloomberg emails came to light, and it was then that I started the process of strengthening it, and will continue to do so. Thank you, Robert. Beth, can I come to you?
Yeah, thank you. Beth Rigby, Sky News. Prime Minister, people are worried sick at the prospect of their energy bills going up by £300 or more after June. The Conservative government back in 2022 capped bills for all households through an energy price cap. It cost about £40 billion. You're not going to do this, are you? Can you just level with people that wealthier households are going to have to suck some of this up? And on the Mandelson files, your national security adviser said the process was, quote, weirdly rushed. And Mandelson was appointed before developed vetting had been complete. You told MPs in the House of Commons that due process was followed. Is there a possibility that you have misled the House when you said that? Thank you.
No, and the independent adviser looked at that very question, I think, on Thursday or Friday of last week, and answered it very robustly, that the process had been followed. The process wasn't strong enough. And amongst the changes that I intend to put into place is the fact that you can't announce someone until the vetting is finished. It wasn't an individual decision in the Mandelson case. That was the process. Well, you only have to look at that in the light of the appointment to realise that that needs to change. But on due process, the process that was there was followed. The problem was the process wasn't strong enough. But ultimately, it was my mistake, and I have apologised for that, and quite right too. In relation to a wider point about energy bills, because I do know how worried people will be about this, and as I said, I've been to a number of community centres across the country where you can feel that, and I'm not surprised. We're not ruling anything out, but it is very difficult to say at this juncture what the position will be in July, which is when the current energy cap runs out, or what the position will be in September. And obviously our focus at the moment is de-escalating, dealing with the straits, and trying to find a way to limit the impact. My instinct is always to help working people in a situation like this, hence the energy price cap that we put in place, in fact reducing energy bills, which is one of the measures at the budget, and making sure that is held until June, the work we've done on those that heat their homes through oil, which was a real cause for concern, particularly in the tail end of last week when people were beginning to fill up their tanks and they could feel for themselves. And this is an area where, in addition to what we can do through the money we've been putting in today, whether it's that or petrol, I'm absolutely determined to clamp down on anybody who may think of ripping others off in a situation like this. I've heard too many stories of deliveries being cancelled in order for the price to go up. Have to clamp down on that sort of ripping off. But I'm not going to say to you now, because so much is unknown, what we might do in July. We are going to have to do what we can do now to de-escalate, keep this all under review. And as soon as it's necessary to say anything further, I will obviously do so. But it's simply not sensible to say that in a number of months' time, not knowing what the situation will be, that the following will be ruled in or ruled out. So that's the approach that we're taking. Thank you, Beth. Can I go to Andy at Channel 5?
Thank you, Prime Minister. Andy Bell, Five News. So initially you said no to the President when he wanted to use UK bases for the first wave. It feels like now you're saying no again to sending any kind of, certainly any kind of shipping.
Finally. Well done, Andy Bell.
Are you basically saying to him, there is no military way of opening up the Straits of Hormuz, we have to go for de-escalation? And presumably you must be getting worried now that your relationship with the President is getting pretty frayed.
Well, just to go through this in order, I said no to get involved in the initial offensive action and getting drawn into the war. And I stand by that decision. As I said a moment ago, many people criticised me heavily for that decision and indicated that they would have rushed into the war only, in my view, for them to backpedal a week or two later when they saw the consequences of what action they would have taken had they been Prime Minister. In relation to the defensive action, whether it's what we're doing in the region, have been doing since the few hours after the conflict started, or whether it's the use of our bases, that is in collective self-defence of our people in the region and our bases. The Strait of Hormuz is then a separate discussion, and it is a discussion. We're not at a point of decisions yet, and I want to really stress that. It is obviously a difficult question, that goes without saying, in relation to how you safeguard maritime traffic through the straits. Everybody knows the geography and the risks. But we are working and discussing that with the US, with Gulf partners and with the Europeans. And I discussed that yesterday with President Trump in the way we often discuss things. So that's where we're at on that. There are no decisions having been made. It'll have to be something which is agreed by as many partners as possible, is my strong view. And we're not at that stage yet, but we are working hard. I discussed it with President Trump yesterday in the way that you would expect between two allies and two leaders. And as soon as there's more to report, I will make sure that you have that. Thank you, Andy. I've got Chris Hope from GB News. Chris.
Thank you, Prime Minister. GB News viewers are very, very worried about petrol prices, as you might understand. Yeah. They don't understand why you won't open up oil and gas fields to try and bring down the cost, mitigate that against, of course, the dash to net zero. Why not open up those oil and gas fields? And just on the special relationship, if one is bad and 10 is good, how would you rank your special relationship right now with Donald Trump?
So, from a brilliant question there from Andy Bell to an absolute skipfire of a question from, what's his name? Chris Hope. Let's go back now.
Conflict. And many are worried that it escalates rather than de-escalates. I'm clear we need to de-escalate. In relation to their bills in the here and now, we are taking measures to protect them. And I want to just make that clear for all your viewers, because For the next 3 months, their bills will come down and be held down. And they need that reassurance because some are worried that they're going to go up next week or next month. That won't happen. Obviously, we'll have to keep under review what happens elsewhere. If they're oil-based, and some of your viewers will be, the announcement I've made today is to give them help with that because already their bills are going up and they're not within, or they wouldn't otherwise be within the scheme. On oil and gas in the North Sea, obviously that's going to be part of the mix for many years to come, so there's no difference of position there. We did make progress on what's called tiebacks. Your viewers may have seen that or not, but that basically allows further access into oil and gas in the North Sea, so that's already in place. But the question I'm answering or trying to address at all times is what are the measures that are actually going to take money off bills now or in the foreseeable future? And that is by ensuring that we've got a better mix of renewables and that we go to renewables. And there's no denying, because we've seen this firsthand now, we saw it in Ukraine, we saw it in the 12 Days War, we're seeing it again now. If you're on the international market for oil and gas, you're vulnerable to the price going up on the international market because we, the UK, have little control over that. And our North Sea oil doesn't give us control over that because we sell onto the market. What gives us control is renewables, our own homegrown energy, which is then more secure and more independent, which is why I think that we should go further and faster in relation to renewables. Let's get control of our own energy so that whatever's happening on the world, we control what's happening in this country. And I think for many people, they'd say, by whatever means you do it, get control of energy so I don't have to keep worrying that my bills are going to go up and down. I want to get to that place as quickly as possible, Chris. Thank you very much. Look, I mean, it's a good relationship. We had a good discussion yesterday about...
I'll keep an ear on that on your behalf, but I think it is time now for the headlines.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, the Prime Minister has promised to help families with the cost of living as energy prices spike due to the war in the Middle East. Sir Keir Starmer has announced £53 million in support for households exposed to rising heating oil prices. The oil isn't covered by the energy price cap, and some customers have seen their bills double. Speaking in Downing Street in the past half hour, Sir Keir was asked whether more support will be provided if the conflict extends beyond the summer.
I'm not going to stand here and pretend to you that we all know what the situation will be in the 3 or 6 months' time. We don't. The best way through this is to de-escalate and reduce the conflict because that is the simple, most effective way to deal with the cost of living, and that's where we're putting all of our focus. But look, you heard what I said about my instinct, and obviously we'll always do whatever we can in relation to cost of living for working people.
Sir Keir also said the UK is working with allies to develop a viable collective plan to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz. The key shipping lane in the Gulf has effectively been shut by Iran, cutting off around a fifth of global oil supplies. President Trump earlier called for NATO members to send warships to help the US police the strait. Some urged that a teenager at a sixth form in Faversham is one of two people who've died following a meningitis outbreak. The other person was a student at the University of Kent, with 11 others thought to be seriously ill in hospital. The UK Health Security Agency is to provide some students with antibiotics following the outbreak. Dr. Tom Nutt is from the charity Meningitis Now and has told LBC the signs people should be looking out for.
Part of the problem is that the early signs and symptoms are very easily confused with something like flu or a hangover, because you're really looking for, you know, a high temperature, a headache, vomiting, that sort of stuff. But of course, as the disease progresses, what you then find is that you then may get the more kind of classic signs and symptoms. So that could be a stiff neck, an aversion to bright lights, and in some, but I would stress very much not all cases, a rash that doesn't disappear.
And Britain's biggest water supplier, Thames Water, has confirmed it's been offered a cash injection of more than £3 billion. The firm, which is nearly £20 billion in the red, is facing collapse unless a rescue package can be agreed by creditors. The company has been fighting nationalisation for more than 2 years. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 23 points at 10,284. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather. A mainly dry end to the morning, but rain will move into much of the country by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Feel that? That little buzz of excitement? That's the weekly flutter. With chances to win up to £10,000, enter British Heart Foundation's lottery for a thrill with goodwill behind it. Because when you play, it helps fund life-saving research. So go on, keep playing, keep winning, keep us beating. Search BHF Lottery. Gamble responsibly, over 18s only. T's and C's apply. Please see our website for more details. British Heart Foundation is a registered charity.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 11, the press conference continues, but given that some of the great and the good of the British media seem more interested as the United Kingdom stands on the precipice of possible war, more interested in the Peter Mandelson appointment. I confess to being a little bit surprised by that, although in their defence, Robert Peston at ITV had an exclusive that he was keen to air. I don't know quite what was motivating Beth Rigby, except, of course, the fact that they don't get the opportunity to question the Prime Minister directly every single day. They normally have to go through a spokesman, so they are going to try and reinflate those. Some things you probably need to be aware of. Laurie Magnus, the independent advisor on ministerial behaviour, who was appointed by Rishi Sunak. Liz Truss didn't have one. And the reason why the position was vacant when Liz Truss became Prime Minister was because two had resigned in disgust at Boris Johnson's absence of concern for ethics. So Laurie Magnus is a Tory appointment, and he has looked at the appointment of Peter Mandelson and concluded that process was followed duly. Keir Starmer, because he's Keir Starmer, says, well, in that case, the process needs to be even stronger because this obviously shouldn't have happened, which is why I've apologised. But the massed ranks of Fleet Street at the end of last week were obsessing and behaving in a way as if that was never going to happen, but then it did. And also, the warmongers on Fleet Street and in some broadcast studios that were adamant Keir Starmer should have been getting up to his ears in this war were then complaining about fuel prices. So I'm hoping that balloon has popped. The idea that you can somehow attack Keir Starmer for rises in fuel prices while also attacking him for not getting involved in a war that is sending fuel prices skyward. Some other things that you may not be aware of. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi has clarified that the Strait of Hormuz is actually not closed to ships that are friendly. And you don't really want to be friendly with Iran, but you could perhaps be neutral in the current context. And were we neutral, or were vessels from neutral countries to turn up in the Strait, they would be free to progress. The ban is on ships linked to the United States and Israel. Listen, you can't trust Iran any more than you can trust the White House, to tell you the truth. But it's important to know what it is that they are actually saying. So that's interesting point number one. Interesting point number two, from an 8-minute phone call that Edward Luce of the Financial Times had with Donald Trump yesterday. The threat that something, quotes, very bad, end quotes, would happen to NATO if they fail to help him in his illegal war. Opening up the Strait of Hormuz specifically, notwithstanding. There's another bit in the interview that's extraordinary. Asked whether Russia was helping Iran with satellite data to target US and Israeli anti-missile shields. I know I hit you with a lot of stuff, but this is really important. Trump said, I don't know one way or the other, but you could also make the case that we helped Ukraine to an extent. It's hard to say you're targeting us, but we've been helping Ukraine. So he's now comparing Iran to Ukraine. Also very rude to Volodymyr Zelensky this weekend after the Ukrainian president offered technology, drone-based technology, that is actually world-beating because they've had to create it on the fly. Helping Ukraine. Is the United States helping Ukraine is the same as Russia helping Iran? And Garry Kasparov, who knows a thing or two about Russia, the former chess grandmaster who has in later life become an extraordinarily prescient commentator on matters American and Russian. Garry Kasparov points out that after, very simply, that destroying NATO is on the same Putin wish list as raising the price of oil. So after a year of threatening to go to war with one NATO ally, a boorish campaign to treat another as a colony of the US, and the denigration of all who fought and died for America in Afghanistan, he has the gall to say this, is what has been posted by Michael Weiss, to which Garry Kasparov responds by saying, destroying NATO is on the same Putin checklist as raising the price of oil. So now you know. Oh, and one thing I would add to this, and I am a little bit confused, and I'll be honest with you, a little bit insecure about why more people aren't doing what we've been doing, to the degree where we even got it laminated. I'm talking about the Chilcot checklist. So I'm talking about the 7 years, the £10 million, the 12 volumes put into ensuring that we as a country never made the same mistakes that we made with regard to the last Iraq war, coming up with or distilling down the entire inquiry into, well, one document that you can find online called The Good Operation. You can find the whole thing online if you've got a spare week to read it. But The Good Operation itself distills down into the Chilcot checklist. Number 5 of which, of 10 points, is how do we ensure action is lawful? But crucially, number 6 is what does success look like? Number 7 is how do we need to deliver? Number 8 is how should we do it? Number 9, how will you monitor performance? And number 10 is the policy working? So having heard Keir Starmer there describe working with allies on a very specific plan for the Strait of Hormuz while rejecting out of hand any prospect of joining the wider war, you realise he is consulting the Chilcot checklist, I would say, every single day at the moment. Because every time the facts change, the questions change. Every time the facts change, he has not just a right, but a responsibility to change his mind, or at least to contemplate a change of mind. Do you want to join an illegal war with no plan about how it should be conducted, no idea of what success looks like, no notion of how of what needs to be delivered, no way of evaluating whether the policy is working? No, we don't. But if Iran then respond to American and Israeli attacks by targeting our positions or our allies, the questions change. What does success look like? Success involves minimizing or reducing or obliterating Iran's ability to attack us or our allies. So immediately, I worry sometimes I sound a bit patronizing, but you just heard those questions. It's as if none of the people in that room, with the possible exception of Andy Bell of Five News, have even read this. So that's why when the facts change, the situation changes. So you can answer the question of what success looks like if you're talking specifically about Iran attacking our allies. You can answer the question of what success looks like if you're talking specifically about getting the Strait of Hormuz open to all vessels, like it was 3 weeks ago before Netanyahu and Trump started bombing Tehran. You can answer the question of what we need to deliver. What you can't answer yet is how we could do it. Point 8, planning and doing, which is why they are currently in talks with allies, including European countries, to discuss how we would do it. And that then leads us to how will you monitor performance and is the policy working? So, again, I don't think it's time yet for another phone-in about whether or not Keir Starmer is playing a blinder, because, well, partly because he clearly is, but also because we're back in the weeds of the situation rather than enjoying the luxury of taking a step back to examine the bigger picture. We'll catch up with Natasha about that press conference, which was, of course, dedicated officially to the package of support for people struggling with fuel prices. Inevitably, it moved into the realms of Iran and war itself, and I think, unfortunately, some journalists took the opportunity to ask him about Peter Mandelson, which he should be asked about, but maybe not at that press conference. I'm asking you, not about Peter Mandelson, but about Keir Starmer, and he is now walking a tightrope, but a very real tightrope, between not getting involved in the wider war and discussing with allies the possibility of helping to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. You could argue he shouldn't even be doing that. But this distinction between point one, the wider war, point two, the response to the response, and now point three, the Strait of Hormuz, could all elicit different answers. I mean, at the moment, we've got no yes, maybe. How would you answer that third question? Should Keir Starmer be helping, or how should Keir Starmer be helping to reopen the Strait of Hormuz? It is 12 minutes after 11. All, of course, underpinned by the simple fact that the best way to make this whole thing stop is almost certainly to stop bombing Iran. But there's no guarantee Donald Trump can deliver that while Benjamin Netanyahu has got his finger on the trigger. So I'll rejig the phones. In other words, if you haven't rung in yet or if you've got something to add to what you've already heard, the phone lines are now open again, 03456060973. I'm not biffing off people who've already rung in. We'll take a couple of calls that have been waiting because Keir Starmer's comments there were neither unexpected nor game-changing. But the facts have changed in the context of the Strait of Hormuz. It wasn't shut to ships, to any ships, until Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu started bombing Iran. And now the idea of getting it open again, Donald Trump is demanding essentially that we help clear up his mess. And it's not, I'm afraid, an easy request to dismiss out of hand. Should Keir Starmer, with allies or without, be helping to clear up Donald Trump's mess in the Middle East? While Donald Trump still fails to deliver any clear idea of what success looks like, what they need to deliver, how they're going to do it, how you'd monitor performance, whether the policy is working, and crucially, of course, whether or not there's any guarantee that the action is lawful. It's coming up to 11:15. The number you need, as always, is 03456060973. The question is, essentially, is Keir Starmer getting it right? If not, what should he be doing differently? And if, like me, you feel you're... Yeah, I mean, not your brain is tiring, but the crucial distinction between making a decision based on the fact that Donald Trump is Donald Trump and then making a decision despite the fact that Donald Trump is Donald Trump, I think this one is a despite. The wider war was a because. You can't follow a man like that into an illegal war. You shouldn't really follow anyone into an illegal war, but a delinquent, deranged toddler, absolutely not. Then you're faced with a question based on the fact that Donald Trump, despite the fact that Donald Trump is Donald Trump, so despite the fact that Donald Trump is Donald Trump and a delinquent, unreliable, dangerous toddler, should Keir Starmer be helping to clear up his mess? Your thoughts after this.
This is LBC.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today. Interactive Investor would like to say welcome and thank you. Welcome to all our new investors who joined us over the past few months. And thank you to a certain competitor that decided to change their fee structure and sent them all our way. Visit Interactive Investor to see what you could save with our low flat fee. Interactive Investor. I think, therefore II. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
Sorry to interrupt your day, but I've just been diagnosed with dementia and I'm going to need your help. I'll need help when I can no longer button a shirt or recognise my own family. My daughter will need help too. I worry this could ruin her
James
life.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
16 minutes after 11 is the time, so we're back in the zone. And the zone is essentially asking the question of whether or not Keir Starmer is getting this right. He clearly got it right the first time, despite, as he just reminded us there, all the people queuing up to insist that he'd got it wrong. Kemi Badenoch, of course, adamant that she would have sent a warship that was not equipped or armed straight to the Middle East upon Donald Trump's demands. Donald Trump says so. When he shouts, jump, Kemi Badenoch appears to shout, how high? And then a week later say, I never said how high at all. Like, no. I had a brilliant plan. It just goes to a different school. And then the various right-wing commentators, almost all pro-Brexit, which I think is relevant, because psychologically it's fascinating that people can't admit the scale of their error, even when the evidence is slapping them around the face on a daily basis, and the simple fact that when the facts change, the question changes, or at least the answer to the question changes. Should Keir Starmer be helping clear up Donald Trump's mess in the Middle East? Kevin's in Clacton. Kevin, what do you think?
I phoned up just because when you play that clip with Donald Trump saying about the guys not being on the front line in Afghanistan, that one just makes my blood boil.
Yeah, of course it does.
Absolutely.
Is it relevant, Kevin? Because are you ex-military?
Yes.
Yeah. You are ex-military, so it's going to upset you even more than it upsets somebody like me and a lot of other people listening. But Keir Starmer can't base a decision upon that, can he? I think this is why I'd be a rubbish prime minister, because I'd be like, no chance, we're coming to bail you out until you apologise, which would achieve nothing except making us feel a little bit better. I don't know how relevant it is, and yet I can't leave it out of the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I would like, and it's probably not going to happen, I live in a bit of an idealistic world, really, but I would like a full apology from Donald Trump before we even let him use any of our air bases, as simple as that. You know, even if they do it through the back channels and say, listen, if you come out and say this, then it's going to settle everyone down a little bit. I don't think we should be offering any help whatsoever other than defending our own interests, obviously, in that area. And I don't even think they should be using our air bases until he comes out and says, oh, I misspoke about the Afghanistan thing with our allies, because I've got friends out there. I've got friends who are blind, missing legs. You know, it's a serious thing. As for getting involved in a wider war, absolutely not. I mean, it's clearly an illegal war. You know, it doesn't take the brains of an archbishop to figure that out, and we should stay well out of it. And plus,
since when were archbishops paragons of intelligence?
Well, I've got no idea.
I mean, normally you'd say Einstein or something like that I've never heard an archbishop. So anyway, I mean,
maybe compared to the troops on the ground, they're quite clever. I don't know. Maybe it's an army thing that we used to say.
It's a lovely phrase. I might nick it. But it wouldn't make any difference, the apology, would it, in the great scheme of things? It would just make us feel better about getting involved in this specific exercise.
I agree with that, but at the same time, I'm just like, how can we have this madman just saying whatever he wants when he wants without any kind of consequences? There's no diplomacy there at all. As for getting the Straits of Hormuz open, I see, it's, again, simplistically, there's two ways to do it. One, a complete regime change of Iran with a friendly regime that is happy to let ships go in and out. That's probably a 10-year project that might never, ever happen. You know,
well, not from, if it were to be externally imposed, it would be a long and messy war with no guarantee of success at the end of it, as we've discovered in Iraq and in Afghanistan and even in Libya.
Yeah, the Americans don't have a great track record. I mean, I study a lot of military history now. Americans haven't won a war since 1945, so they don't, as much as they like to brag.
Excuse me, he's won this one.
Well, I mean, in which case we don't need to offer him any help.
And he's ended 8 others. I think it's 9 now. If you include this one, that's 9 wars he's ended, including the one that he started and didn't need any help with. But anyway, we digress slightly.
I can't listen to the man, no.
So that's option one is a change of regime in Iran, which most people would welcome, but you need to know how it's going to be achieved before you actually turn it into a government policy. Option two is just not bombing them anymore and returning to where we were a month ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I think that's the only two ways that really is the only two options on the table. Talk to Iran and de-escalate and figure out a way to bring them back to the table and you know, get the straits open. No matter how much that is uncomfortable to people to be dealing with a regime like Iran, but we do have friendly allies that don't have great regimes either. I mean, you can point out many of our allies in that area that aren't particularly nice regimes to a lot of people. So, you know, we can have discussions with regimes we're not particularly comfortable with. I'm not particularly comfortable with being an ally of America right now. But, you know, that's how it is. So that is
diplomacy, isn't it? It's not a zero-sum game. It's about compromise and negotiation, and the idea that we should have followed blindly into a war that had no end game, no clear objectives, no definition of success, and no legal basis was one for the ages, except, of course, that it was about 80% of the commentating class in this country, if not more. 22 minutes after 11. Kevin, thank you. Remember, you can grab Kevin's phone line if you're quick, 03-4560-60973. The question essentially is once again about whether or not Keir Starmer is getting it right, but with different detail, because today it's about the Strait of Hormuz. And you know that point Kevin just made, again, I don't think you can labour this too much, talking about a negotiated solution, because Donald Trump said, oh, Iran have asked to negotiate a solution, and I said no. And Iran came straight out and said, no, we haven't. And here is a question for you. Because you know that the Iranian regime is objectively hideous. They do terrible, terrible things to their own people. You also, as Kevin reminded us, know that many regimes in the Middle East are pretty much objectively hideous. Israel, for example, is the only one that's recently committed a genocide, according to many, many observers and experts. But you look at it, and now you have to ask yourself, who do you believe? The White House or Tehran? Who do you think is a more trustworthy describer of events? Donald Trump or the Ayatollah spokesman? That's a rhetorical question, this. Or at least I'm not going to answer it. I'm just highlighting to you where we are now as a consequence of people in the UK falling for the idea that Donald Trump was A, not a delinquent, and B, somehow interested in us. Who do you think is a more reliable witness to events that only they know about for sure? Who do you believe when Donald Trump says they wanted to negotiate and I said no? And the Iranian regime responds by saying, no, we didn't. Who do you believe? Who do you think is more trustworthy? Isn't that terrifying? That you can't answer that question? It's arguably from the outside even more terrifying if you think that you can. Ben's in Benidorm. Ben, what made you pick up the phone?
I would say that if there could be any possible difference, thinking about it horribly pragmatically, if there could be any possible difference by Britain and various European and NATO allies becoming involved in this, then yeah, of course we should do, even though it's a revolting thing to do, right? However, I've spent the whole weekend listening and reading articles about the Straits.
Yeah.
And frankly, unless you have complete ground control, which means a commitment of probably tens of thousands of troops, yeah? There is no way that you can control it. Therefore, there's no point in us getting involved because we will get nothing out of it unless we decide, alongside America, to commit tens of thousands of... Well, we wouldn't be able to commit tens of thousands.
You're missing one thing, and I am as well, mm-hmm. and you've clarified it for me, because you're talking as if the military option is the only option. When Starmer talks about a viable collective plan that he is discussing with allies, that doesn't necessarily have to be a military option.
No, but I don't think... I mean, let's assume for a second that Donald Trump decides he's going to call it a victory and just leave,
yeah.
Right? I think that what the Iranian regime has realised is that actually, if he declares victory, but they just carry on bombing Dubai, bombing our Middle Eastern allies, yeah, then Trump will look like a loser, and I think they want to impress that upon their population. That would strike me as being both domestically very important, but also internationally extremely important. Secondarily, I think that whatever happens now,
yeah,
in order for Iran to actually strike a deal, they would want something quite extraordinary. Because remember, the last two deals we've struck with them, we as the West, I've spoken about, reneged on both. So we would have cast iron guarantees.
Trump has reneged on them.
Yes, Trump has reneged upon them. But
so why would they sign anything with him again? God, I'd missed that. I'd do my best, Ben. But I'd missed that any negotiated settlement is undertaken in the full knowledge that the other signatory is about as reliable as a chocolate teapot.
Exactly. So I don't think there's a good option. Like I say, if you could say pragmatically, awful as it is, if we could keep the Straits open, let's commit the Royal Navy. But actually, every single person says that's impossible without a massive land invasion. And
Because of the geography, simple geography of the situation, which is why that comment from the Energy Secretary Chris Wright on NBC News this weekend was simultaneously completely of a piece with the bigger picture and absolutely terrifying. It was, well, so why is this happening? Well, it turns out the Strait of Hormuz is really near Iran. That was essentially, did you hear it? That was essentially his answer.
Yeah, I did. But can I just say something?
Of course
you
can.
When I was a little boy, I went to school in Italy.
Oh, yeah.
And about the age of 8 or 9, right, we were taught at Italian elementary school, right, that one of the most important choke points for any sort of trade, and this has been the case since 500 BC, right, were those straits. Mm. Now, I've known that since I've been 9 years old, James. How come the CIA didn't know that?
I'm not here to defend the CIA. Oh, someone's going to clip that up, aren't they? I think second term Trump, all of the people that would be pointing out things like that have been removed from the conversation. I was thinking about this last night, actually, because like you, I spent much of the weekend trying to get a better handle on things. And like you, I marvel at the idea that people could have been taken by surprise by the Strait of Hormuz. Yeah. But I think they were, because nobody wants to say anything to Donald Trump that he doesn't want to hear. And I guess Netanyahu doesn't care about this in the context of global trade or global oil flows. Trump would not have had anyone in that room. Remember, now they're threatening to shut down broadcasters who will point out things that are unfortunate. You're undermining the American war effort, Ben, by pointing out that the Strait of Hormuz has been understood as a geopolitical choke point for the best part of 2.5 millennia. How dare you undermine the American war effort by pointing out that everybody knows this, that Italian school children understood this. How dare you, you traitor, you Lord Hor de nos jours. And that, of course, is not an exaggeration. That is what Brendan Carr, the Federal Communications Commission chair, is now posting on social media, accusing actual journalists of doing fake news, while, of course, amplifying and punting the barefaced and blatant lies that are told by the actual president, up to and including, we have won the war and we don't need any help from anybody. Which, of course, is the sequel to 9 months ago when they had another war that they claimed they'd won so effectively that Iran's capabilities had been completely obliterated. And then this week or this weekend, the claim that Iran has had all of its military capabilities removed but is somehow still capable of attacking ships in the Strait of Hormuz. Here's a question for you. If you had all of your military capability removed but you're still capable of attacking ships in the Strait of Hormuz, what are you attacking them with? Potatoes? Are they all just lining up on the shore and throwing fruit at these big oil tankers? Because if you've had your military capability completely destroyed, and he told us the number, he gave us the figure, this isn't an opinion, this is counting, he said 100% of their military capability has been completely destroyed. 9 months after, he told us that 100% of their military capability had been completely destroyed for generations. So what are they doing? How are they attacking the ships? What's the threat that he needs NATO's help with from a country that now has zero? Because if you've destroyed 100%, I have an O-level in maths, if you've destroyed 100%, what you're left with is zero. So they have 0% of their military capability, but they're still capable of attacking ships to such a degree that it needs help from NATO, months after threatening to invade a NATO ally, of course, in the case of Greenland. Dominic Ellis has your headlines.
The Prime Minister has promised to help families with the cost of living as energy prices spike due to the war in the Middle East. Sir Keir Starmer has announced £53 million in support for households exposed to rising heating oil prices. Sir Keir's also said that the UK is working with allies to develop a viable collective plan to help reopen the Strait of Hormuz. The key shipping lane in the Gulf has effectively been shut by Iran, cutting off around a fifth of global oil supplies. And a nursery worker who abused young children in his care has been sentenced to 24 years in prison. Nathan Bennett, who's 30, was found guilty of a series of sex offences against five children at the Partu King Street nursery in Bristol. LBC weather, a dry but cloudy end to the morning. Rain will move in for much of the country by the afternoon. A high of 13 degrees.
This is LBC.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swimming with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by lunch!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to PensionBee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
A message from TfL.
I saw Alicia's photo in my newsfeed. All I can think of is her family. How they're getting on. If they're getting on. I didn't look when I pulled out, and she never made it home. Sounds crazy, but it felt like her motorbike came out of nowhere. But I know the truth. I didn't look again.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
33 minutes after 11, we heard bits of Keir Starmer's news conference at Downing Street earlier this morning. Natasha Clark, our political editor, heard the whole thing. She was, to paraphrase the best musical ever written, she was in the room where it happened, and she joins me now. Natasha, a quick roundup, if you would.
Morning, James. Yes, I think the main sort of takeaway from that press conference is Keir Starmer saying that he is working with our UK allies on some form of plan for how to get shipping through the Strait of Hormuz. Of course, the pair, we understand, spoke last night. Keir Starmer and Donald Trump spoke last night on the phone to talk about that. And we heard over the weekend the president calling on other nations to join a naval coalition to ensure that ships are able to get through. But country after country in the last 24 hours has distanced themselves from President Trump's plan. And many have said that they don't want to take that risk of escorting military vehicles through that strait because of the risk of obviously retaliation and confrontation from Iran. Here was what the Prime Minister had to say on the plan that he and other allies is working on.
We want to make sure that that involves as many partners as possible, particularly talking to European partners, inevitably talking to Gulf partners and to the US, because we need a credible, viable plan. This is, to say the least, not easy.
That was Keir Starmer speaking at Downing Street just a few moments ago. Now, it's fair to say he didn't completely rule out any future action. He said that we were not at the point of making any decisions on what to do at the moment, and that he was talking to Donald Trump and talking to others about a considered plan. He again used the words that he used a couple of weeks ago about the idea that any military action that the UK gets involved with must be based in international law, must have legality, and must have a clear plan. So clearly the Prime Minister having another diplomatic line to toe, trying not to further upset Donald Trump, who over the weekend has made yet more disparaging remarks about the UK Prime Minister. But Donald Trump obviously trying to push Keir Starmer and trying to push other countries to go even further. The Prime Minister also used this press conference to announce some more support for poor households who pay through heating oil to heat their homes. It's of course soared in price due to the conflict in Iran. The Prime Minister announced £53 million worth of help for those poor households. We don't have exactly the details of who it will be, but the Prime Minister says he hopes that it will get to those who need it very quickly. He was also asked about whether the government might intervene in the coming months. Of course, we know that the energy price cap is in place for now, so it means that people will be protected for the next couple of months. Of course, there are major questions about what happens after that. The Prime Minister refused to rule out another energy bailout in the style of that Liz Truss was forced to intervene in her very short tenure in Downing Street. It cost £40 billion, if you'll remember, at the time. He said all options were on the table. They're not going to rule anything out. And finally, James, obviously, lots of people concerned about the cost of fuel. There have been experts today warning that the government might have to look at the possibility of fuel rationing if the conflict continues to go on. He was asked about this at the press conference this morning. Number 10 said there was no risk to the UK's supply of fuel, but the Prime Minister said they were doing all they could and keeping a close eye on the situation.
In relation to the supply of energy, obviously we're taking all necessary measures to make sure there is the right supply of energy. It's really important that we do so, and it will always be a mix of oil and gas and renewables. We're actually using more renewables now than we were in 2022, which is helping in relation to supply, but we'll keep that under constant review.
So the Prime Minister sort of saying essentially that they will be keeping a close eye on it, but like I say, there's no need to worry at the moment, no need for sort of panic stations at the moment, Number 10 trying to calm any fears of supply, at least for the moment. But it is fair to say that there's lots of work going on in different government departments. We understand the Chancellor is convening an Iran task force for potential action that she might have to, you know, turn on the spending taps, and obviously she has managed to find £53 million to help reduce energy bills. Like I say, the price cap at the moment is going to be in place, but the Prime Minister will face lots of questions, I think, between now and June about whether they will extend that price cap any further and whether it might mean an energy-style bailout like what we saw in October 2022 in response to the war in Ukraine.
Thank you very much indeed, Natasha. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor at the news conference earlier today, where Keir Starmer was setting out the details of the support for poorer families with regard to the rocketing cost of fuel. Specifically, I think this one directed at people who heat their homes with oil. We used to have one of those. We used to have an oil delivery with a big tank in the back garden because we lived on an old farm that it was kind of off the... It's not off the grid, flipping out. It was just on the outskirts of Kidderminster. It wasn't in the middle of the Gobi Desert, but it hadn't been plugged into the gas pipes. So the heating was done by oil, and we'd have it delivered. And the prices are incredibly fluid, if you pardon the pun. And the accusation that you heard the Prime Minister making earlier was that some suppliers have been extremely, shall we say, creative in their pricing policies, given not least, of course, the fact that they will have in storage reserves of their own. So what they paid for it last month will be considerably less than what they'll be paying for it next month. But if they see an opportunity to charge you next month's prices for last month's oil, then there is currently, as I understand it, nothing in place to stop them from doing so. Speaking of sharp practice, I did not know on Friday when I told you to keep an eye on rentals. I said it was either Thursday or Friday. You can rewind live radio and check. I said on either Thursday or Friday that my mates who still rent, I shouldn't say still, my mates who rent their homes have been telling me, one in particular, because he's having an absolute nightmare at the minute, that there is a glut of landlords pulling out of the landlord business entirely in preparation for the Renters' Rights Act that comes in later this year. And I said, keep an eye on that because it's going to be big. And then, lo and behold, I open up one of my newspapers this morning, in fact, most of my newspapers this morning, and there it is. The story has, about 72 hours after I told you that it was going to break, it has broken. I had no idea of the timing, and I'm not yet, because I've been so obsessed with Iran, 100% clear on why it has gone big now, as in today, or indeed this week. But we were minded, I still am minded, possibly to change the conversation to that from 12 o'clock today, or we may carry on here, because as I said at the beginning, there are many, many moving parts, all of which Keir Starmer has to be aware of, none of which Donald Trump seems to acknowledge. And every time you think things can't get any worse, when Donald Trump is involved, of course, they do. So I've been sent some footage of him from last night, and it's very hard to make out what he's saying, because he's just got off a plane, I think, and is it probably Air Force One, is, what's the correct verb? Blaring away in the background, Air Force One is what it's more than a whir. It's more than a whir. Roaring's good. Roaring away in the background. So I might play it to you actually to prove that you can't hear what he's saying, because otherwise you might not believe me. Fake news. So this is what we think he said. This is Elliot's put together a transcript. He's producing the show this week. It's a place where they get their energy. It's a place where they get their energy. They should come and they should help us protect it. You could make the case that we shouldn't be there at all because we don't need it. We're number one. We're the world's largest producer of oil times two. So 20% of the world's oil comes through the Strait of Hormuz. Except at the moment it doesn't, because Iran has the ability to leverage the threat of intervention, just like it was the it was some rebels in Yemen, wasn't it, that were doing it most recently. It's such a tight bottleneck. Were they Houthi rebels Houthi terrorists, rebels in Yemen who were doing it. And Iran can do the same. So, you know, they don't need to attack a ship for the people who are sending the ships to be aware that they could attack a ship and therefore they're not going to send the ship. But as Trump points out, the USA is a large producer of oil. So the 20% that makes its way through that channel is not going to have a massive impact on them necessarily. I mean, his understanding of things is, of course, notoriously poor, but that would be the presumption that he's working on. And therefore, why should we even bother? So we've started an illegal war. The people that we've bombed have responded by closing this essential strait, this channel, this crucial channel. But we don't need the stuff that's coming through the channel. So, psh, why should we get involved anyway? Why don't all the people who didn't want to go to war and didn't join us in the war, why don't they come and undo the mess that I've made? Because the mess that I've made is going to affect them more than it's going to affect me. And that's America first for you. It is 11:42. Tom's in Maidstone. Tom, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, hi, James.
Hello,
yeah, I picked up the phone because basically we did have a way. I can see a way that we could potentially contribute. Contribute hulls towards an international group which would be accompanying ships into and out of the Gulf. In the 80s and 90s, the RN provided what was called Operation Armilla, which was usually where we deployed a group of three ships at the time, plus an RFA. And we basically...
What's an RFA? Remember, I know nothing.
Fleet Auxiliary.
That would be a tanker,
you know, which is a tanker and supply vessel.
Yeah.
So we would deploy those out to the Gulf. They'd operate at the lower end of the Persian Gulf and the Gulf of Oman. And basically, we'd accompany big, ultra-large tankers into and out of the Gulf. And this was at the time of the Iran and Iraq war, which I'm talking about.
Okay.
So, you know, we were there. We were a presence. We kept ourselves at arm's length from the Americans, who were also out there, and also the Russians as another power. They used to be present in the area. So we operated independently. Now, I can foresee that we could possibly collaborate with our European partners, possibly the Australians and the New Zealanders, to mount a similar type of operation where effectively we could say to Iran, we're not combatants, we're not belligerents, we are simply here to accompany the vessels into and out of the Gulf, pretty much as they've said that they are willing to allow us to do. Now, at that time, it was a hostile environment. I was there when the Iran Airbus was shot down by USS Ticonderoga, and it got a little bit hot at that time because basically the Iranians would lock us up with their shore-based saltwater missiles and also with their warships popping up every so often. But basically, you know, if we're operating as an independent unit or as an independent organization...
Well, independent of the USA and Israel.
Yep.
That's all we need to be independent of. Independent of the war, as it were.
Yeah.
And this is a precedent. You're describing an effective precedent, not specific to the Strait of Hormuz, but specific to the broader region.
Well, it's specific to the Strait of Hormuz because we had to accompany ships from...
You went through there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, forgive me. So it's an even bigger precedent than I initially understood. And this is why I suggested cautiously a moment ago that when Keir Starmer talks about a credible, viable plan in conjunction with allies, including many European countries, it might be a mistake to presume that that involves military engagement.
You don't have to be military engaged. You're not putting boots on the ground. You're simply providing a protection. You're showing the flag and... Basically, if you've got a coalition, it's not then just simply one country's maritime policy.
Yeah.
I'd also add as a footnote that in 1982, during the Falklands, the Australians and the New Zealanders relieved some of our units by basically taking on the responsibility for us. So, again, the Australians and the New Zealanders have got a precedent there as well.
You're ex-Navy, obviously.
In
this... sort of moment in this context, let me tell you what I think you've told me and then you tell me whether I've got it wrong or not. Because the question I was going to ask you is, well, if Iran is comfortable with what we're doing, if we've negotiated this settlement, why do you need the ships there? But the ships are there as a kind of circuit breaker. It's all very well saying you can come through here, but in the event of any hostilities, then the presence of the Royal Navy would be the safeguard against hostilities, because if you fire at us, we'll fire back.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. It's an insurance policy.
But you wouldn't do that in the face of... If hostilities were a known, to go all Donald Rumsfeld for the moment. So if Iran is saying, we will attack ships coming through the Strait of Hormuz, then you wouldn't risk doing what you're doing because the stakes would be too high.
You might still be there. I mean, we were there at the back end of the Iran-Iraq war, and so there was always the possibility of being misidentified or your intentions not being made clear.
That's what I mean, yes.
But The fact was that we operated out there, they knew we were there, and they knew what purpose we were fulfilling. And on that basis, you know, it would be an escalation were the RCG to do something other than simply acknowledge and respect that position that we were taking. So we would be accompanying the vessels through the straits as we've been asked to do, or as...
And as you say, this is where diplomacy becomes crucial, and the Chilcot checklist, alongside the fact that we would be acting collectively and legally, would mean it was something that Keir Starmer could sign up to, whereas, of course, the original war was neither collective nor legal, so he couldn't. And there's a plan, and we know exactly, so I mean, to run through the last 5 points on the Chilcot checklist, what does success look like? Easy. What do we need to deliver? Easy. How should we do it? Easy. Just phone Tom in Maidstone, he'll talk you through it all. How will you monitor your performance? Fairly easy. And is the policy working? Easy. To answer all of those questions.
Yeah, comparatively. Yeah, we've got a book on the shelf which shows us how we did it in the past. And of course, that then rolled into Kipion, but the fact is that we did it in the past. It's documented.
There you go, that's Keir Starmer on the other line.
There you go.
Nice one. I'm just happy to help. It's 11:48.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As the President, Donald Trump, seems to ask for all his NATO allies, including the UK, to send warships to help him, Trump, and the US Navy protect the Strait of Hormuz. Stuart in Manchester phoned in first. What should the UK do now, Stuart?
We should send our Navy there to support. We can still maintain our defensive stance. At the end of the day, we're defending our resources, and not only our resources, it's Europe's resources as well. We should make sure the oil's getting through.
David in South Woodford.
There is no military solution. This is America and Netanyahu's mess again to stop this war and let the rest of the world live.
Jason Marilyn.
I don't see what choice we've got. These ships have to be coming through. We can't let them stop. But my concern is that the UK, we couldn't even stop protesters on the M25.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Hi, I'm looking for a pair of jeans.
Right. Low slung, slouchy, wide leg, bower leg, curved leg. Flared, straight or skinny?
Blue?
Fashion. It's hard to keep on top of. Other things, like the upcoming changes to renting, are a bit easier. As a landlord, you will need to get on top of these important changes. They will affect how you manage your tenancies. Act now. Read the guidance at gov.uk/renting-is-changing.
With an Amex business card, Selena's earning points renovating her skin clinic and refreshing the builders.
14 coffees and 28 sugars, please.
And on new adjustable chairs for every room. And she can use the points to lie back and run.
Don't put ice cream on your brother's head.
Well, sometimes. And that's because with an Amex business card, your points can go towards holidays and more.
Search Amex business card. Interest, fees and terms apply. Available to UK limited companies and limited liability partnerships. Signatories must be a director or member of the business. Subject to approval.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Right, who's all in for Cancer Research UK's Race for Life? Sunday Leaguers! Dog Lovers! Bait Clubbers! Banger Dancers! Baby Ravers! Potters!
Whether you walk it, jog it, or run it, go all in against cancer. All in to help fund life-saving research. Sign up to your local 3K, 5K, 10K or Pretty Muddy event from just $14.99. Search Race for Life. Prices vary by event distance and participant age.
A spectacle far beyond your imagination. Be amazed. Be moved. Be there. For an experience that will stay with you forever. Disney's The Lion King at London's Lyceum Theatre. Book now at thelionking.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Text 84850.
11:51. The UK was not, of course, the only NATO member to suffer human losses in Afghanistan. I think that I looked this up when Donald Trump was threatening to invade Greenland. I think Denmark, per capita casualty rate or fatality rate, was the highest. Higher even than the United States. So there's two things there about the denigration of NATO allies that Donald Trump has undertaken in the last few weeks, remember. Threatening to invade a NATO ally, in the case of Greenland, and maligning the memory of NATO allies' war dead who died in an operation necessitated by NATO, by George W. Bush triggering Article 5 of NATO, and NATO allies therefore being alongside the Americans in Afghanistan. And, of course, now you have the prospect of the man who presides over the largest navy in the history of the world asking sailors from other countries potentially to die in a war that he started without consulting anyone. Are you up for that? Are you up for that? I don't know. Presumably Daniel Hannan is. He thinks this was the worst humiliation since Suez. Presumably Richard Littlejohn is in the Daily Mail. He's never been more ashamed to be British than when Keir Starmer declined to join an illegal war that is now unravelling in ways that were fairly clear from the start. Daily Mail, of course, put Tony Blair's support for Donald Trump on its front page as a way of attacking Keir Starmer just a few short years since they responded to the Chilcot inquiry by anointing Tony Blair as a sort of de facto antichrist. So I know you're not as obsessed as I am with the amorality of the media in this country, but if you want to understand how a population can end up acting against its own interests on a nuclear scale, you need to understand what the mass media is doing. And in America, the mass media is facing threats from Donald Trump's administration that they will lose their broadcasting licenses if they continue to report the news, rather than reporting the lies that Donald Trump and his key allies routinely disseminate. None of this is exaggeration, you know? I'll tell you what, a couple of you have pointed out, most recently Alana in Grantham, I'm beginning to wonder whether the FIFA Peace Prize is actually all it's cracked up to be. I mean, I don't know about you, and obviously I don't want to jump the gun on this, but I'm beginning to wonder whether the FIFA Peace Prize is actually as august and as significant an award as we had all been led to believe. It's far too soon to start questioning the probity and brilliance of Donald Trump's Board of Peace, but I thought we could all have agreed not long ago that the FIFA Peace Prize was probably more valuable than a Nobel. I mean, it was the biggie. It was the big kahuna of international peace prizes. And now here he is starting a war. 11:54 is the time. And the question continues. What should Starmer do? Or, if that's a bit early for that one, should he do more than he's currently doing? And the question that I am drawn to, because it's the way he keeps talking about a credible, viable plan. And if we're going to indulge my obsessions for a moment, why does everybody who got this wrong also, why did everybody who's got this so horribly, dangerously and traitorously wrong, why were they also in favour of Brexit? Now, don't at me to tell me that you weren't, that you voted Remain and you got this horribly, horribly wrong. Or you voted Leave and you got this horribly, horribly right. I'm talking about all of the prominent figures in the media and the political establishment. I would like to do a phone-in about that, but I can see that it might be a very personal and peculiar line of interest. But it's when he talks about a credible, viable plan. And I can't help thinking, if only people had pointed out that there was no credible, viable plan for Brexit, then maybe people wouldn't have actually voted for it, because they voted for all sorts of nonsense. But it may be too soon, and it may be too obsessional. That might actually be a case of Brexit derangement syndrome and Trump derangement syndrome joining forces to create a question that nobody except me is interested in the answers to. But think about it. Look at the political figures that were adamant Brexit was going to be brilliant, and then look, and the media figures, and then look at the political and media figures who 2 weeks ago were attacking Keir Starmer for not getting involved in this illegal war. And you can draw two conclusions. Number one, it's not a Venn diagram, it's a circle. And number two, they never learn. Oh, and number three, they never admit they're wrong, these people. It's extraordinary, right? Martin's in Billericay. Martin, what made you pick up the phone?
Good morning, James.
Hello, Martin.
Yeah, referencing one of your earlier callers, I don't have the brains of an archbishop myself. But
have you heard that before, that figure of speech?
That's superb. I love that.
It's a new one on me. Go on. I've met a couple of archbishops. I mean, they're not stupid men. They're not stupid people, but on we go.
No, my IQ, James, is well below that. But I just wanted to make a couple of points, because this is obviously a lot of moving parts in the whole discussion. Firstly, heating oil. My heating oil, I got a quote last Friday.
Yeah.
It's actually trebled.
Yeah.
It hasn't doubled. It's gone up from 55 pence a litre to 189 a litre.
They're having a giraffe, aren't they, the suppliers? Because there's no way that they're paying those. I mean, for the oil that you ordered last week, and you've probably got it on a regular order, have you?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I've written to our MP, James Cleverly, who's pointed to the CMA, the Competition and Markets Authority, and it's going to be raised, obviously, with them.
Good.
But the wider point, James, I think, going back to Keir, I think he's playing it exactly right.
Mm.
And I think drawing us into a potential conflict is the wrong way to go. And I agree with what he's done so far, playing his cards close to his chest, because this isn't a war that really, I don't think America was going into. They've gone on the back of the Israelis with their wider ambitions in the Middle East.
Well, that's certainly what Marco Rubio said initially. And then, of course, him being a senior member of Donald Trump's regime, he undid it and said the opposite 24 hours later. But and that, of course, leaves us all in a position where we don't actually know what the truth is. And increasingly, the temptation is not to care. But you can never give in to that temptation.
No,
the problem is that there's one thing missing from our conversations so far this morning, and it is the delinquency of Trump notwithstanding, and the sort of murderous ambitions of Netanyahu. We can't just leave them to it, can we? I mean, there comes a point where you sort of, they're talking about policing the Strait of Hormuz. I mean, really, somebody, and this is of course what international law used to do but doesn't anymore, and hopefully will do again. There's an argument for Starmer and whatever allies he's currently consulting with over what to do, actually essentially staying the hand of Trump and Netanyahu. They're the ones that need policing now.
No, I agree, James. And isn't it ironic as well that Trump, I believe, had a conversation with Putin about releasing some oil that's non-sanctioned? I mean, that is just playing, one hand and then reapplying.
The Putin angle is the only thing you can say with certainty about Donald Trump is that he'll never do anything that upsets Vladimir Putin.
No. But I think
comparing Ukraine to Iran as well yesterday, essentially saying, yeah, they're probably helping the Iranians, but hey, we're helping Ukraine, as if those two things are the same. It's extraordinary.
And also, James, if I may say, the one thing that Trump did get right, probably last year now, is that Britain and the NATO allies do have to increase their spending on defence for the peace of the world.
If we were a more intelligent species, Martin, we would take two lessons from this, in my opinion. One is, yes, yours, the Francis Fukuyama reading of history has been proven to be completely wrong. It's not over just because the Cold War ended. The threats are existential and real, and NATO needs to adjust accordingly. It's not NATO's fault that they haven't, because the United States quite enjoyed its position as the dominant partner. But Trump has shown us that that is not something that can be guaranteed indefinitely. And the second thing would, for me, be renewables. It would be the other point that Keir Starmer made in response to that ludicrous question from the GBB's correspondent about drilling for oil that would immediately be sold on the world markets anyway, so it wouldn't provide any particular relief to people like you with your ludicrous bills being hiked up in Billericay. That's an argument for trying to rejig our energy market as well, so more spending on defence and more reliance on energy that's reliable and not dug out of the ground in the Middle East or similar. I just thought that was self-evident, but hey, what do I know? It's 12:01.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Sir Starmer has announced a £53 million support package to help people exposed to rising heating oil prices due to the war in Iran. More than 1.5 million households rely on that type of fuel. Heating oil isn't covered by the energy price cap, and some customers have seen their bills double in recent weeks. Speaking in Downing Street this morning, the Prime Minister said the government will tackle unlawful practices.
If the companies have broken the law, there will be legal action. And because it's clear this market is under-regulated, we're going to put that right to ensure customers get a better deal.
Sir Keir Starmer also said the UK won't be drawn into the wider Iran war. President Trump has warned that NATO faces a very bad future if members don't help the US reopen the Strait of Hormuz. The key shipping lane has effectively been shut by Iran, cutting off around a fifth of global oil supplies. The Prime Minister says he's working on a viable plan with Europe. A nursery worker who abused young children in his care has been sentenced to 24 years in prison. Nathan Bennett, who's 30, was found guilty of a series of sex offences against five children at the Partu King Street nursery in Bristol. LBC's South West of England reporter Thea Rickard is following developments at Bristol Crown Court.
The judge here at Bristol Crown Court called Nathan Bennett an evil, incorrigible and dangerous paedophile while sentencing him to 24 years in prison in a case branded every parent's nightmare. It took the jury at Bennett's trial less than 4 hours to find him guilty of all the charges he denied. That's including 2 counts of rape.
It's emerged that a teenager at a sixth form in Faversham is one of two people who've died following a meningitis outbreak. The other person was a student at the University of Kent, with 11 others thought to be seriously ill in hospital. Health officials are providing antibiotics to some students in the Canterbury area after the outbreak. And Thames Water has confirmed a revised rescue bid has been tabled by creditors to try to save the troubled supply from nationalisation. More than £3 billion is being put forward by London and Valley Water, an increase from the offer lodged last October. In this city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 44 at 10,304. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, a dry start to the afternoon, but rain will move in for much of the country later in the day. A high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 4 minutes after 12. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Thank you, Tom. You're right. I did miss an open goal. The ballooning bills in Billericay. My love of alliteration is well documented now. So you're pointing out the ones that I've missed. I continue talking about. We've got an LBC exclusive for you later this hour, by the way, involving Palantir, a company that we should probably all be working a little bit harder to find out more about, and Ed Davey on this occasion wading in to a scenario that involves Lord Mandelson, the Ministry of Defence, and the controversial AI firm Palantir. We'll be finding out more about that later this hour. I'm still obviously fascinated by the unfolding situation in the Middle East and the growing sense that Keir Starmer continues to get everything right on this, and not for the first time. I'm glad that I have been quite critical of Keir Starmer recently, because it insulates us from any accusations of bias or footballification. And people on the left really shouldn't have to face accusations of bias or footballification, because so many of them, or us, were absolutely unimpressed by Keir Starmer's predecessor. So the idea that you're going to continue waving the flag for a party, even when it, whoever is the leader, has been put to bed for a generation by the Labour movement. Conservatives, unfortunately, still have. And Kemi Badenoch now is trying to accuse Keir Starmer of lying. I read a piece in the Daily Mail today. Very small, though. I suspect she was furious when she saw how little space they decided to dedicate to her latest meanderings. But she's, so cheerleaders for Boris Johnson accusing Keir Starmer of lying with no evidence. So my new favourite hobby. So where did you stand on Boris Johnson lying? And of course on him losing two independent advisers on ministerial ethics because they were so disgusted at his contempt for ethics. Yes, I was all in favour of that. I'm James Cleverly and I thought he should have had another go at being Prime Minister even after he'd resigned in disgrace. Oh, I see. And Keir Starmer, oh, pants on fire. Absolutely incandescent underwear. Keir Starmer, liar, liar, pants on fire, down with him and all who sail in him. Boris Johnson again? Yeah, I mean, I'd be just at some cake. Absolutely fine. No, I mean, inverted pyramid of piffle, truth, something, something. Ethics, what? Advisors, who? What? Keir Starmer, pants on fire, liar, liar. Boris Johnson, top bloke, lovely man. And not just politicians, of course. Some people who get paid for their opinions and their journalism fall into that category as well. And it is to them that we turn our attention next. Because I want you to tell me why. All of the people that got this wrong are also people who got Brexit wrong as well. Because on the outside, they don't have much in common. Why would joining an illegal war in the Middle East, particularly given that pretty much everybody now, with the benefit of 2020 hindsight, positions themselves as having been opposed to the war in Iraq or having been hideously misled by the dodgy dossier or the claims of weapons of mass destruction, the lessons of Chilcot? Why would those two constituencies of British people be almost identical? And I'm talking largely about the political and media establishments. I'm continuing to ask you the question of what we think we should do, the UK, the West, should do with reference to the Strait of Hormuz. How should Keir Starmer respond to Donald Trump's petulant demands for help in a war that he was adamant a week ago was already over and they didn't need any help anyway? But I have an intriguing question about the cheerleaders for both. The cheerleaders, if you like, the sort of the edgelords of wrongness, the four donkeys of the crapopolypse, whichever you prefer. Why would somebody hideously wrong about Donald Trump's attack upon Iran and the role that Britain should have played in it almost unanimously have been in favour of Brexit? It's a genuine question, because I'm a bit of an expert. I sound like Daddy Pig. I'm a bit of an expert on Brexit and the people who got it all so hideously wrong. I sometimes dredge things up from the back of my memory banks that nobody really should remember, and plenty of people wish that nobody remembered, like the comments David Davis made about they need us more than we need them, or turning up in Berlin the morning after the vote to negotiate a completely illegal deal with German car manufacturers. The ignorance was off the charts. We mentioned Dominic Raab earlier today. We haven't mentioned him for years. But he, of course, became Secretary of State for Brexit and then discovered that there's a lot of trade between Dover and Calais. Nigel Farage, of course, pledged to leave the country in the event of Brexit being a failure, and he does spend an awful lot of time out of the country, most recently in America, hoping for a meeting with Donald Trump that never materialised. But he is an MP, so I don't think anyone can claim that he has become an immigrant, like his partner, and indeed his ex-wife. And I think one of his sons is an immigrant as well, I think, to Hong Kong, if I read that correctly. But never mind. They're not immigrants, remember. They're expats, just like all the people in Dubai avoiding tax. Oh, and Richard Tice was in the newspaper this weekend for avoiding corporation tax. More on that story possibly later this hour, or indeed tomorrow, when Henry Reilly is back with Reilly's Reform Roundup. So, why? I'm normally pretty good. So support for Donald Trump hinges on three things. Support for a certain type of politics hinges on racism, misogyny, and or climate change denial. You can see it. It's oddly why people are trying to use this war, where they support a racist, to argue for more drilling and more fossil fuels, because that is, hand in hand, that is the reason for climate change denial, so that people can continue making money out of damaging all of us. But why would the crossover be so close to complete between people who supported Brexit and people who have spent the last fortnight eating their own words with regard to Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's attack on Iran? It's a genuine question. I don't think it's got an easy answer. If it's got an easy answer, then we'll be done and dusted by half past 12 and we can move on to something else. But I want you to call me and tell me why those two groups of people are more or less interchangeable. What is it about two completely different propositions, prospects, policies, 0345 6060973, that sees almost exactly the same people queuing up to support both of them? Genuine question. Why would the people who were hideously wrong about Brexit have all popped up over the course of the last 2 weeks to be hideously wrong about Iran? So that is, if you like, the side order for the next hour of the programme. The central meal, the main course, remains what should Keir Starmer do in response to Donald Trump's increasingly petulant demands for help in undoing the mess that he is currently making in the Middle East. So we're looking at the Strait of Hormuz, we're looking at NATO, we're looking at Donald Trump's demands that NATO allies come to his assistance, and we are remembering that in the last few weeks alone, he's not only threatened to invade a NATO ally, he's also insulted the war dead of all his NATO allies, most obviously us, because we are a British radio station and we lost 457 people in Afghanistan as a direct result of our abiding by our NATO responsibilities, but also every other ally as well. So two questions for you. What should Keir Starmer do meaningfully, substantively and plausibly in response to Donald Trump's demand that NATO allies come to his rescue and assistance in a war that he should never have started? And while it is obvious to most of us that he should never have started that war, why are almost all the people who are insistent that A, it was a good war to do, and B, Keir Starmer was a disgrace for not getting involved from the start, why are almost all of those people pretty much guaranteed to have supported Brexit as well? I'm fascinated by the juxtaposition of idiocy or the coincidence of wrongness. Is it simple gullibility or is it something more sinister? If you want to answer either or both of those questions, then the number you need is 0345 6060 973. It's coming up to 11:14. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The sort of quick update of the situation, if you're just joining us, is pretty straightforward. Keir Starmer stands resolute in his original decision to stay out of this war. He has described the necessity of a credible, viable plan when it comes to getting the Strait of Hormuz open once again. And he has joined a long and growing list of countries that are not dancing to Donald Trump's tune, or indeed rushing to Donald Trump's assistance when he demands that they somehow redirect resources to the Middle East and help to undo the almighty mess that he has created by waging a war that a week ago he claimed he had won and didn't need any help with anyway. So there's two quite different but obviously very closely linked questions for you this hour. The first is, what should Keir Starmer do? Is he getting it right? And the second is, why are all these people who have got everything wrong with regard to this war also people who got everything wrong with regard to Brexit? It can't just be stupidity or gullibility or corruption. There needs to be something psychological or political or personal that explains this incredible double whammy of dumbness.
This is LBC.
You've probably been with the same energy supplier for decades. And why wouldn't you be? Loyalty matters. But lately, bigger hasn't always felt better. You've probably dealt with long waits and endless automated menus in search of someone who can actually help. Octopus Energy is now Britain's biggest energy supplier, trusted by over 8 million customers, because we do things differently. Our people focus on the most important thing, you. When you call, you'll speak to a real person. No robotic scripts, no computer says no, just an honest conversation with someone who actually wants to help. Join the millions who've already made the move. Octopus Energy, recommended by Which? A record 9 years running. Visit octopus.energy/better for verification.
The famous five were boarding the train, ready for their next great Western adventure.
Who knew Wales and the Southwest had so many myths and legends? Said Anne.
Such amazing stories. King Arthur's Camelot, the Giants of Avon Gorge, the Hound of the Baskervilles.
Oh, I do like listening to a good tale, said George excitedly. You're good at telling tales too, teased Dick.
Great Western Railway. Legendary adventures start here.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC with James O'Brien. Text 84850.
12:16 is the time. Couple of gremlins in the system today, but my colleague's doing sterling work to ensure that your access to my dulcet tones continues as unpolluted as possible. And it is to these two questions that I turn your attention next. One, we will continue to ask, I suspect, all week, which is Keir Starmer getting it right? 03456060973. And the other one, very, very personal inquiry, but why is it as if Brexit never happened? When you look at the attention paid to people who have got the whole Iran scenario hideously and horribly wrong, why is it that they are almost all, when you look at my profession or when you look at the political establishment, they are almost all exactly the same people who insisted that Brexit was going to be brilliant, and until relatively recently would argue that it had actually or was actually going quite well. I just want to know why you think that is. Why does that supposed Venn diagram look so much like a circle? One or both of those questions. Murray's in Hartford. Murray, what would you like to say?
Hello there, how are you?
Very well,
Murray. Just my observation on this is it comes down to something that's very similar to the States. When you have a figurehead like Farage, who has positioned himself like a mini Trump, I think a lot of people are frightened to go against what Farage says, and Farage therefore sets the agenda with a lot of people. Because if it'd been interesting, if Farage
are you talking about normal people, or are you talking about politicians and pundits? Because I think, I mean, far be it from me to defend Daily Mail columnists, but I don't think they're frightened of Farage. They might fetishise him, they might, you know, fancy him in political terms, but I don't think they're frightened of him necessarily.
I feel as though there's a strong influence on the owners of these newspapers owners of the media. I don't think you can be a Daily Mail columnist and have views too far away from what the citadel of Farage says, because I think there's going to be a lot of situations where these people who are the mega wealthy understand, and they've looked across the pond, that if they get someone like a Trump in, which is our Farage,
they're going to make a lot of money.
Deregulation coming through. You look at, I always make me laugh on the Easter side, they used to talk about supply-side reform, basically just doing away with employment rights and certainty.
Yes.
So, in answer to your question, I think there's a couple of other layers to that, and you've discussed it before in your book. I think there's a point now where saying I was wrong is almost impossible for a lot of normal people.
Yeah.
So if you think about people who have boxed themselves into a position, I've spoken to you on the phone about Brexit before, and you know, the David Davis situation about the deal was in Munich the next day.
I think
it's almost impossible for a lot of people to backtrack. And your researcher was asking me, but why would Kemi Bader not be doing the same then? She's not in ad hoc to Farage. No, of course she's not. But I tell you what, she, more than anyone, needs some of those voters
But you said, I mean, this is going to sound odd coming from me, but I think you're bigging him up too much. I think the public opinion is massively opposed to this war and massively opposed to any involvement or engagement with Donald Trump. And they came out of the blocks. I mean, you could obviously have set your clock by the speed with which Nigel Farage would do whatever, or come out in favour of whatever Donald Trump or Vladimir Putin were doing.
But you're mistaking the amplification that these people have.
But they all came out of the blocks at 100 miles an hour. So why would... Yeah. I mean, what you're doing, of course, is pointing out it's very hard to find somebody who was in favour of Brexit who hasn't turned out to be either Farage adjacent or a bit racist. So Dominic Cummings used to hold his nose, of course, when he was talking about Farage. But lo and behold, it turns out that he was just as nativist and grim as Farage was all along. He just didn't think the public was.
I think there's a situation here that I think we underplay the fact that a lot of people are now so wedded to something that they can't see the wood for the trees. And the other problem as well is now that I think we underestimate as well just quite how much money a lot of very wealthy people are going to make.
And they're calling the tunes. All right, one little fly in the ointment of your reasoning. Which would
there'll be many.
Well, I can only think of one, and that would be Andrew Neil, who actually was writing relatively clear-eyed critiques of Donald Trump a few weeks ago and pointing out the what was obvious to everybody, honest, from long before that, but better late than never, for Andrew Neil. And he was getting it right, and then he went all in on the war. And I don't think he's a particular fan of Nigel Farage, so why would someone like Andrew Neil, obviously a Brexiter, despite being allowed to work for the BBC throughout, why would Andrew Neil be in favour of war, being waged by a man that he was beginning to recognise the hideousness of, and, of course, be in favour of Brexit, leaving Farage entirely out of the equation? What's wrong with him?
I think he just likes the oxygen of publicity.
Down with that sort of thing, Murray. Down with that sort of thing. crikey, you're boxing me into all sorts of unfamiliar and uncomfortable positions here, where you don't need to be as old as Methuselah to remember when Andrew Neil was a brilliant journalist and in many ways the best interviewer that we had. So he's not thick, and I don't think that his vanity extends to saying stupid things for coins or attention. His critique of Donald Trump last month was really strong and good, but the speed with which he started rattling sabres and accusing, what did he say? My American friends are asking me whether Britain has lost its marbles, and when I look at Keir Starmer not joining the war with Donald Trump, I have to argue that he has. And then I think a week, well, he was on our reverse ferret list, wasn't he, last week? He was one of the contenders for king or queen of reverse ferret, although I think Nigel Farage beat him to the crown with Kemi Badenoch in a close second place. Andrew Neil came third. And Dick Littlejohn was only in fourth because so many of you had no idea who he was. So it may have been that his reverse ferret was more screeching than anybody else's, but you can't win if you are a relative non-entity, albeit that you're still paid large sums of money by the Daily Mail to be wrong about everything and to be bigoted about everything else. Thank you, Murray. James is in Leighton. James, what's going on?
All right, yeah, I think I might have got it.
All right. I'll be the judge of that, champ.
Yeah. I think it comes down to a whole bunch of isms, basically. You've got, like, colonialism, jingoism, but then imperialism. It's just like the same people that they had with Brexit, and the reason they think we should have got involved in this is because they always hark back to the fact that, you know, Great Britain should be in control of the world, and, you know, we should take back our borders and sovereignty and all this kind of stuff, and we should go and sort those Arabs out, even though they're not actually Arabs. I think it's always this thing that is like we think that Britain should be in control and leading the world, and everyone should
To knit together as many of these isms as possible, we would be talking about a form of white supremacism?
Yeah, I think it is a bit of that. Well, certainly the Britain is this sort of, what was the word for it? It's British exceptionalism.
Exceptionalism. There's a lot of isms. You're not kidding, are you?
Yeah, so I think it's all, if you all, the isms. Up all of those isms. And they've always got their own reason for it. Part of it is this little blinded patriotism. But it's a thing that they always use to the Daily Mail readers and everything to sort of like distract from everything. It's always just like, Britain's great. It's all wonderful. Even though we're really not the power that we used to be.
Rule Britannia. Britannia waves the rules.
It's a bit far as Churchill. It's all that kind of stuff.
A bit of Churchill, a bit of Spitfire, a bit of warm beer, and a bit of Facebook pages about eating Spangles and drinking straight out of the garden hoses. I mean, that's definitely a massive bit of Brexit, and it is all of those people's misfortune that they live in a world that doesn't exist and hark of a dream of returning to a world that never existed. And I was thinking a bit about the Commonwealth this weekend, because they used to insist when they were telling us to come out of the European Union that we would be able to rebuild our bonds with the Commonwealth, and that Commonwealth countries would fill the holes that would be left by European workers. And then they did, and now they're talking about deporting them. So that was obviously a massive lie. Colonialism, though, would explain that more than jingoism. Why does that So, cause you know, I'm obsessed with the idea of Barack Obama going to war against Iran. And, of course, your isms mean that they wouldn't have supported Barack Obama if he'd waged war in Iran because he was the wrong colour.
Yeah, exactly.
The
yeah.
same people.
And sort of, yeah, the wrong middle name for them as well.
Nostalgia. So yeah, it's a conversation of nostalgia, bigotry, and all the isms.
Yeah, it's almost the whole slightly different point. But my wife's an Australian from the Commonwealth.
Oh, yeah.
She's been on indefinite leave for a very long time. We're in the process of trying to get a citizenship because everyone, because as a Commonwealth person, to her, indefinite leave is going to be revoked properly yeah. sometime in the future. But yeah, I think isms. I think there's lots and lots of isms and there's sort of blind flag waving. I've just driven through Waltham Cross and there's a lot of sad looking flags half at mast down there as well. So yeah. I thought when you were talking, it's,
well, there's another crossover. People putting up tatty flags. People voting for Brexit and people thinking that we should have joined a war in Iran because Donald Trump was leading it without any real understanding of what the consequences would be or what the rationale for doing it was. I like it. I mean, I'm taking the isms. I was hoping, to be honest, I don't want to say for something more sophisticated, but something a little bit left field, something coming out a little bit... less expected. Lewis is in Putney. Lewis, what would you like to say?
Hello, I'd like to give you my theory on why
Let's
there's
do
the
it.
Overlap. All right, so my theory is, pre-2016, pre-Brexit, a lot of the talk was about how we need to have better unions, you know, global trade, and especially with the US, and we need to be closer to them. They're the biggest market in the world. And so, this was all before Donald Trump got elected, and then post-Brexit, it's much more protectionist world views now, especially now. And so before, when they were saying we need to be much closer to the US, they were like, he's the better ally. And they portrayed the EU as the enemy. They don't have our interests at heart. And especially since Trump came in for the second term, where he's been imposing tariffs, he's been acting much more like an adversary.
Yeah.
And so really, our allies are actually much closer and are the EU. And therefore, to say if we didn't back the US now, you would have to admit that actually our allies all along were the EU.
This is what we're talking about. This is a little bit more layered and nuanced than the isms. I like the isms. I'm not dismissing the isms. I am not, for the record, ismist. Big fan of isms. I love isms. Some of my best friends are isms. But in terms of trying to get inside the psychology of people who are not stupid and who may not deserve to be described as jingoists or imperialists or colonialists or even white supremacists, but are probably a little bit exceptionalist, you can't cling to this notion of the Anglosphere. That's the missing piece of the jigsaw. You can't cling to the notion of the Anglosphere, which underpinned a lot of the Brexit bigotry, without going along with whatever Donald Trump does.
Exactly. And so, like, when, obviously, if you're much closer economically as a union and you can live and work in Europe, you would obviously see that people are not your enemies.
Yeah.
And that they're your friends and even family. I'm an extremely lucky man that I have a German girlfriend and I go to Germany a lot.
It's an exceptionalism thing. I mean, yeah. In fact, it goes hand in hand with the isms. It's not an either or this, because you only have this exceptionalism or this. I remember the first time I heard Daniel Hannan use the word Anglosphere and I didn't know what he was talking about. But of course, it's a euphemism for white people. I mean, he doesn't, when he talks about the Anglosphere, he does not mean Barack Obama. He means Donald Trump, and when he talks about Australia being part of some homogenous human block, he's talking about English-speaking white people and not Polish people or, indeed, members of former colonies, not sort of Pakistani people or other members of the Commonwealth, and that's why they go hand in hand. Why can't they just be quiet? Why? I mean, if I was Dick Little John or I mean, he was writing about lollipop ladies last week. He didn't have to go in and say, I'm more ashamed to be British now than I ever have. So why did they have to go in on Keir Starmer? Then, why couldn't they just stay out of it?
Because then they would have to admit that they've made us weaker. That's why we have to.
They could have just stayed out of it. They didn't have to say anything. They could have just talked about, I mean, what was his other column about last week? A 25-year-old episode of The Bill and why that has so many lessons for modern Britain. Could he not just have done that? He could have written about Dad's army, or actually probably It Ain't Half Hot Mum would be more up his street. But why couldn't these people have just stayed quiet? Why did they have to gallop into the wrongness when it came to the war in Iran?
I would guess because a lot of the political right get funding from the US as well.
Just have to show their support for some. That might be true of some people. It's not true of the ones I'm thinking about. It's not. I mean, Farage is stapled to Donald Trump and is absolutely detached from observable reality and the truth. That's why Andrew Neil's quite an interesting character. Daniel Hannan, the world's wrongest man, living up to his reputation. But I think I'd have kept quiet. Maybe that's part of the problem. If you've been hideously, hideously wrong about Brexit, then the temptation to say nothing else ever in the public sphere would admit, it would involve, this is why Lewis's point's really clever, it would involve a subconscious or an implicit admission that you're an idiot. So if any of these clowns were to say, I don't have an opinion on this, I'm a little bit wary of getting involved because I made such a prat of myself over Brexit. But they are not prepared to admit that, even though they know it now inside, deep in their bones, they know. They can't say that out loud. So instead, they sort of say Brexit derangement syndrome. Or they say, well, no one wants to talk about it anymore. Why are people still talking? Because the alternative is to look yourself in the mirror and describe what you see. A prat who got it all horribly, horribly wrong. So then something else comes along which demands strong and pungent opinions, and if you didn't offer up a strong and pungent opinion, you would be subconsciously admitting that you're a prat who got everything horribly wrong last time. So here's my strong and pungent opinion about something else I don't understand, because to step back from providing a strong and pungent opinion would involve admitting the last thing that I didn't understand. Are you still with me at the back? Here's Amelia Cox with your headlines.
A £53 million support package has been announced to help people exposed to rising heating oil prices due to the Iran war. More than 1.5 million households rely on the fuel to heat their homes, and it isn't covered by the energy price cap. The Prime Minister says he's working with allies on a plan to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. President Trump has warned NATO faces a very bad future if members don't help reopen the key shipping route. And a nursery worker has been sentenced to 24 years in prison after abusing young children in his care. 30-year-old Nathan Bennett was found guilty of a series of sex offences at the Partoo King Street Nursery in Bristol. LBC weather, cloudy across much of the UK, a band of rain moving in from the west, heavy at times in northwest Scotland, drier in the southeast of England, a high of 13 degrees.
LBC.
At Lloyds, we love that moment a dream becomes a reality. Like for Steve, he's slowly packing his belongings into a small box. A framed photo of his grandchildren, a pot plant that could do with some water, a mug that reads, "Happy Retirement, Steve." As he waits for the lift one last time, he feels lighter, happier. At Lloyds, we've been asking the nation about their dreams. That's how we know Steve's story and thousands of others just like it. We've been backing the nation's aspirations for 250 years. So when it's time to realise your dreams, we're ready when you are. Bank on Lloyds.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
If you owned a diesel Nissan, Renault, Jaguar or Land Rover built between 2009 and 2020, you could be entitled to compensation. Checking takes minutes at jointheclaim.com. And if successful, compensation could be worth thousands. Don't miss out. You could be among the millions of drivers across the UK bringing diesel emissions claims. Check now at jointheclaim.com.
Join the claim!
Eligibility criteria apply and any compensation may vary.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall, proud partner of Team GB.
It's 12:35 before the end of the programme. In fact, in the final segment of the programme, we will be catching up with an LBC exclusive regarding Lord Mandelson and his potential involvement in a £250 million Ministry of Defence deal with the controversial AI firm Palantir, with Sir Ed Davey telling us that, and I quote, it reeks. So more on that to follow. Other stories that were in contention for today's conversation but have been slightly overshadowed by unfolding events in the Gulf include that story about rental properties and landlords quitting the field before the Renters' Rights Bill comes in. We may return to that tomorrow because it's going to be directly affecting a lot of people. And, of course, an awful lot of people who are set to be directly affected by it won't yet be aware of its importance. The King's State visit to the United States next month continues to make headlines, with the UK's ambassador to Washington between 2012 and 2016 suggesting that the mooted trip is problematic and that a postponement might be the most, pardon the pun, diplomatic way forward, because that way you don't necessarily offend Trump, but you also keep the King and Queen out of the, I suppose it's potentially a firing line. I am indulging a very, very personal enthusiasm this hour about why everybody who has got this right, everyone who attacked Keir Starmer, who has been proved, I think, very, very right by events regarding this war in Iran, was also a Brexiter. And I just don't fully understand why, although the picture is becoming clearer. And alongside that question inevitably runs the central one, which no doubt will be playing a part in all of our programmes all week, which is about whether or not the Prime Minister is getting it right. So the words that you take away from today's programme are credible, viable plan. In the absence of a credible, viable plan, how could you possibly consider or contemplate going to war in the Middle East, particularly given the lessons of Chilcot? But if you're talking about getting the Strait of Hormuz reopened, then with a credible, viable plan, it is something that he could see himself getting involved with. So, why are all the people wrong about this, the same people that were wrong about Brexit? And is Keir Starmer getting things as right as I, your humble presenter, believe? Lee's in Watford. Lee, what would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, James. Well done for backing up Lewis and Natasha. Yeah, you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Just quickly, your second question, you're bouncing around the isms.
The Brexity one.
I know you're better than that. It's racism.
All of it.
Yeah. It's platforming racism to appeal to those voters.
Attacking Iran. Well, I mean, I can see why that fits Brexit, but why would attacking Iran be an appeal? Because it hasn't worked. The opposition to it is off the scale. I mean, that could just be an epic miscalculation.
They're Muslims, James.
Say
James,
again?
They're Muslims.
Yeah, but the opposition to it is off the scale. It doesn't enjoy public support, whereas Brexit, of course, infamously did.
Yeah. They don't care about the 60%. They're all caring about the 25 to 30%.
So they're arguing over essentially the reform vote and what's left of the Tories.
Yeah.
Who are demonstrably more likely to be in favour of this war. It's a war against Muslims. Therefore, how can we possibly be against it?
Exactly. Right. So, you know, the isms, you know, there's 100 isms, but the most important is racism. The other one is a phobia, Islamophobia. Right? So, and xenophobia as well. There's two obias for you. On your second question, which is probably the more important, there's no way that Navy assets...
Everyone's a critic. Obviously, the second one is considerably more important than my personal psychodramas about people who chill me to the core. A bit of psychodrama goes a long way.
Absolutely right, and I love your book, and just reread your own book. Right?
Yeah, there's some good, excellent advice. Everyone should reread my own book. Go on the second question.
Yeah, the second question is very simple, right? There's no way a naval deployment in the Strait of Hormuz will reopen the strait. It needs a ground force covering 250 kilometres of coastline. There's no way anyone is putting ground troops. What people miss, James, is in the FT call that Trump did.
Yeah, it's with Edward Luce.
He said other nations should put commandos on the ground to take out the bad guys on the coast.
So he's got very, very limited options, of which I mean, I said in the middle of last week, the beginning of last week, the best case scenario now is for him to call the whole thing off and then pretend it never happened. And I still stand by that.
Ground troop invasion, right?
Because that's what his advice is. Yeah. He's now being told the only way you can actually do this is by escalation, and there's no earthly way you can do that on your own.
No, especially with the US popular, the voters.
They're
at the
very
moment,
against so. It as well. They're very against it as well.
In the real world, Australia, Japan, South Korea, Germany, Finland, Sweden, Portugal, Spain, Italy have all said, we're not getting involved in this until it's a safe combat zone.
And so have we, actually, to be fair to Keir Starmer.
That's exactly what Starmer said.
Making it clear that this is... And then that question of every single person, even the ones that seem to be quite intelligent, who has been attacking Keir Starmer and calling for more war and calling for us to get involved, every single one of them gets filed under some variation of bigotry. It's either white supremacism or English exceptionalism or jingoism or Islamophobia or xenophobia. It is just, this is this guy, he's the massive racist, whatever he's doing, we have to support it, and if it involves killing Muslims, then there is absolutely no debate to be had whatsoever.
Yeah, and also we'll send our troops to be killed on his behalf in order for us to get 30% of the vote.
All arguing over that, and that doesn't, it's not even 30% of the vote, actually, but the people who are more likely to have positive views of Donald Trump, and indeed positive views of this war, are, by definition, the people who understand nothing except their own hatreds, or the Faragists, as you might choose to refer to them. Makes Kemi Badenoch's position even madder than usual, because there is a huge army of dispossessed former Tories who are disgusted by Donald Trump, and in fact who were also disgusted by Brexit, but she's made it pretty clear that she doesn't think there's any point in wooing them, and therefore she won't. Thank you, Lee. John's in Edinburgh. Take us back to the bigger question, John, the question of what Keir Starmer is up to and how he's doing. What would you like to say?
Firstly, afternoon, James. I trust you're well.
I'm extremely well, John. How are you?
You sound quite chipper.
I'm in a very chipper place at the moment for the last few months. I don't know why, because the world continues to burn. But on we go, John, on we go.
Okay. Firstly, thanks for taking my call. You've asked two questions. I'll ask the first one. I'll try and answer the first one first.
Go on.
I think Keir Starmer's playing an absolute blinder. I think he's not walking one tightrope, he's walking two. The first one he's walking is long-term relationships.
Just to pick you up on something there, John, I think it is technically easier to walk two tightropes than it is one.
Never tried it.
I could be wrong, but I'm just thinking in terms of balance. You've got a slightly easier job.
You're right. I might need a bigger pole to hold this.
Sorry, carry on.
Okay, firstly, and glibly, this is not our monkey, this is not our circus, for one. And everything falls out of that. Why should we be drawn into a war with a convicted criminal and a civilly convicted criminal who's trying to avoid impeachment and Netanyahu's trying to avoid going to court for corruption?
Yes.
It's all wrong. In terms of what do they do, which I think was the question, they do what they should do. All wars end in diplomacy. So think about it. This war's going to end at some point, and it's not going to end by people running around the ground shooting one another. It's going to end by diplomats. So that's where it should start and end.
But there's three different things going on here, and I would argue that when it comes to international fuel prices and when it comes to attacks on our bases or our allies, then it is our circus and it is our monkey. And that's why Starmer's position has to change slightly between those three propositions. Should we join the illegal war? No. Should we respond when retaliatory attacks target ourselves or our allies? Well, yes, reluctantly, but definitely. And then, should we be involved in the reopening of the Strait of Hormuz, given its impact on international fuel prices that affect British voters? Then again, I think, yes, we should be involved, but not in the way that Donald Trump wants us to be, and more likely in a way that other callers have suggested would involve, as you've just alluded to, the diplomatic path, the diplomatic tightrope.
Yeah, so maybe you're right. Maybe there are three, indeed, tightropes.
There's three tightropes. I mean, I don't know whether that's easier or harder than one tightrope, or two. What's harder? Oh, never mind. But he is. He's successfully negotiating all of them, however many there are.
Yeah, and I would agree with that, because you think about the oil aspect that's coming through the Strait of Hormuz. My understanding is it's 20% of the world's oil, I think, is the number that's been put out there.
Of that 20%, 80% of it goes to China. Now,
And theirs is still theirs is still going through, I think.
Yeah, of course it is. And so my understanding, or my view is, in terms of trying to retain some form of integrity, self-respect and dignity through all of that, which I think, yes, there's a price to pay, I think you have to take the pain on the oil price, because it will go away eventually.
And just sell it to the British people as the right thing to do. I mean, this is where principle and pragmatism once more lock horns with each other. And in the past, Starmer has well, there's your twin tightrope again, has successfully managed to ride both horses to engage in pragmatic reasoning, while also having some fairly clear principles that he won't resile from. I think it would be harder than ever in the circumstances that you describe. I'll tell you what, though, John. Thank you, mate. We have opened up a right old hornet's nest now with that very lazy observation of mine that walking across two tightropes will be easier than walking across one. Amit's outraged. He goes, no way. Oh, no, he writes. Two tightropes would definitely be harder. And Darren in Weymouth, two tightropes would be much harder because they'd move independently of each other. Otherwise, it's just a broken rope ladder. It's not. It's going across, mate. So I'm imagining it. And if I start wobbling to the left a bit, I start... What do you think? Should we save it till Thursday? Do it on Mystery Hour? What would be harder, walking across one tightrope or walking across two with a foot on each? Because then you'd have to sort of shuffle. If you take your foot off... I think one tightrope would be harder than two. In fact, let's dedicate the whole of tomorrow's show to this question. What would be harder, walking... And I want video evidence of you actually trying to work it out for yourself. It's 12:46.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
Is the best way to help us with petrol and fuel costs for Keir Starmer to say yes to President Trump and send the Navy to protect Hormuz? And are we too tolerant of intolerance?
Sheila Fogarty at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
If you were missold a home on a holiday park, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive compensation. Text ADVICE to 78900.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Daddy? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
Jay here knows that Zoopla can provide valuations for any home in the UK, so we can see what that new couple across the road might have paid.
Ooh la la.
Have a nose at what the curtain twitchers next door could sell for. And even see what his own place is worth.
Cool, look at that.
Plus, Zoopla lets you find and compare local estate agents if you do decide to sell up. Think of all those new neighbours you'll be able to snoop on, Jay. If you want to know, just ask Zoopla.
This is LBC.
With Vauxhall. Energising a better Britain.
12:49 is the time. Before we bring a rather fascinating LBC exclusive to your attention, just I never know whether to be annoyed with you or not when you get more excited about the gibberish that I spout than you do about the really hardcore and expert attempts to analyse current affairs and the international realpolitik. But I've had more messages about whether it would be easier to walk across two tight ropes than one than I have about almost anything that we've done on the programme in the last month. Let me rattle through them quickly. Two tight ropes, no, we've done that one. Oh, no, here we go. Matt, playing a very strong card. My uncle was a professional tightrope walker. Really, Matt? Was he? And he confirms that two tight ropes are always better than one. But he did always tell me never to try any tight rope, though. Walking two tight ropes would be easier than riding two horses, points out Alan in Belfast. Matt speaks for many, different Matt, when he says you would end up doing the splits on two ropes, and nobody wants to see that. Sean added the, and nobody wants to see that. It depends entirely on the distance between the two tight ropes, says David in Lewis. 12.50 is the time. Alex Taylor-Brown is an LBC reporter who has been talking to the leader of the Liberal Democrats, Sir Ed Davey, about a currently somewhat underreported element of the swamp surrounding Peter Mandelson and indeed his involvement in government and some of the ramifications of his the destruction of his reputation while some of the things that he has done politically remain in place. I hope I've summed that up correctly, Alex, but I will leave it to you to provide the further detail.
Yeah, James, there's quite a bit of backstory to this. So if I lose you, prod me with the LBC big pointy stick. This all stems from a meeting that took place in Washington in February last year between Lord Mandelson, when he was British ambassador to the US, the Prime Minister and the CEO of Palantir, Alex Karp. There was a photo op for this meeting. However, the notes on said meeting and what was said between the three are seemingly not available. In December just gone, a £250 million deal was then signed between the government and Palantir, which will see the AI firm invest up to $1.5 billion in our defence. Now, Palantir happens to be a client of lobbying firm Global Counsel, who Peter Mandelson had a 24% stake in up until last month. So questions have been raised from the latest documents of the Mandelson files, which revealed that on vetting his involvement with Global Counsel, that's Lord Mandelson, Palantir was not mentioned as one of their clients. Some of the other clients include TikTok, the Premier League, JP Morgan, but there was no mention of Palantir. So the Lib Dems have had their spring conference in York this weekend, and I managed to speak to Sir Ed Davey about this subject. He's calling for an investigation into all government contracts where Lord Mandelson may have had some involvement. This is what he told me.
What we've seen in recent weeks and months should really worry people, and we need to make sure that there wasn't any corruption.
Is there anything you can do from a parliamentary perspective to kind of force the government to either release those notes on that meeting or to at least sort of talk about it in Parliament?
Yeah, we're going to press the government, just as we have been doing. It was a humble address from the Liberal Democrats who have forced the government to publish, in due course, we hope, all the files related to Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, and we saw that with respect to Peter Mandelson. And I hope the government's not going to require us to come to the House of Commons and force their hand again. They should publish all these notes and all these minutes.
Obviously, Palantir was one of the clients of Global Counsel, of which Lord Mandelson owned a 24% stake in. Does it kind of smack of conflict of interest to you?
This reeks. Palantir's got loads of contracts in our health service, in defence, probably in other parts of the government too. And many of us have worried for some time about how this American technology company, with links to Donald Trump, has got such a vested interest across our government. I think we need to ask a lot of questions. The government's got to be far more open than it's been.
The Ministry of Defence, James, insists that Mandelson played no part in that deal and that Defence Secretary John Healey says that the decision to go with Palantir was his alone. Palantir is this name that we kind of keep hearing now and again when it comes to government contracts. There are some concerns around the tech firm. There have been claims it's been used by ICE agents in the US to pinpoint people for deportation by accessing their medical records. Well, Palantir has contracts within the NHS. And there are fears from some politicians, including Green Party leader Zach Polanski, that it could be used in a similar way here. The company's also got contracts with the Israeli military. And Alex Karp, the CEO, who I mentioned earlier, was heckled last year at an event where someone said, "Your technology kills Palestinians," to which he responded, "That's true, mostly terrorists. Now, back to that February 2025 meeting, and Palantir say no contract was discussed at any point. The meeting was typical government business. So Sir Ed Davey effectively saying, well, if that's the case, then show us...
Prove it.
..what was said. What, exactly, show us what was said then. Lord Mandelson relinquished his shareholdings in Global Council last month following his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in a public office, of which he remains under investigation. But James Moore, questions around Lord Mandelson, his time as British ambassador, and the potential role he may have played in this lucrative government contract. We have to say as well, his legal team have been approached for comment.
What got your antennae twitching on this, Alex? Where did your interest spawn itself?
It's as I say, we keep sort of seeing that that name time and time again, and we had that latest release of the Mandelson files. Like any good journalist, I was asked to go and speak to Ed Davey in a field full of alpacas over the weekend in York. So why would I not want to discuss vested interests of defence and lucrative contracts whilst Ed Davey was feeding alpacas?
But the missing bit of the jigsaw until you had that meeting this weekend was the fact that Palantir had been a client of Global Council, and that Palantir shortly afterwards signed a big deal with the UK government, and Peter Mandelson had essentially facilitated a meeting between the CEO of Palantir and the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. And they're claiming coincidence on all of this.
Yeah, and you know, there was that separately a US-UK tech deal as well, that within these files, a letter by Lord Mandelson to the embassy staff upon him leaving his role as UK ambassador to the US said he was incredibly proud of. Again, that sees billions of pounds of, you know, AI tech between the UK and the US. And whilst it's not specific, this was a separate contract in terms of Palantir and its military involvement, again, that element of Palantir is mentioned within the US-UK trade deal. And if, you know, Lord Mandelson saying he's incredibly proud of that, there was this meeting in February 2025 between him, the Prime Minister, and the CEO of Palantir. Again, the antennas, as you say, sort of twitching on that one.
And Global Council is no more, right?
Yes, so they've gone to administration and... Yeah, so...
Just checking.
So they went into administration, and in February, their chairman, Archie Norman, said that Peter Mandelson no longer has any shareholdings role or association with Global Council, no influence over the firm in any capacity, saying that they're independently governed and continue to focus on serving their clients. But yes, they have gone into administration.
Top man, great work. Thank you, Alex. Alex Taylor-Brown there with a story that I suspect will grow in interest as more people become aware of it. You can read his full report over at lbc.co.uk. You have been listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where if you missed any of today's show, I need a letter off your mum by the end of break. I'm only joking. If you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on our free Global Player or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Podcasts galore, including, of course, James O'Brien Daily, best bits of this show every day, and Full Disclosure, which is an absolute humdinger this week. So do download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. Starmer's Choice. Help you with oil and petrol price hikes, or send the Navy to help America and stop them going up in the first place. That's one theory. Two, Donald Trump clearly wants to get back together in the Strait of Hormuz, as it happens. Keir Starmer is holding out. Is it the right decision, or is it a threat to NATO, as Donald Trump seems to be needling? At 3 today, I want to talk about that Al-Quds static protest that took place at the weekend. There were chants of death to the IDF, Hamas headbands on little children, and Taliban flags flown aloft. Are we just too tolerant of the intolerant sometimes?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From
from Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. A £53 million support package has been announced to help people whose heating bills are rising due to the war in Iran. More than 1.5 million households rely on heating oil and aren't protected by the energy price cap. Some customers have seen their bills double in recent weeks. Meanwhile, the Prime Minister has also been updating reporters on plans to reopen the Strait of Hormuz in cooperation with NATO.
It is a discussion. We're not at a point of decisions yet, and I want to really stress that. It is obviously a difficult question, that goes without saying, in relation to how you safeguard maritime traffic through the straits. Everybody knows the geography and the risks.
Yesterday, President Trump warned the alliance faces a very bad future if members don't help to reopen the key shipping route. A nursery worker has been jailed for 24 years for the abuse of young children in his care. 30-year-old Nathan Bennett targeted 2 and 3-year-olds at Partoo King Street Nursery in Bristol. He was found guilty last month of a series of offences against 5 children. Sir Ed Davey has called for an investigation into Peter Mandelson's possible involvement in the awarding of defence contracts. In December, a contract was signed setting out plans for a controversial AI firm to base its European headquarters in the UK. Sir Ed Davey has told LBC the former US ambassador had connections to the company.
This reeks. Palantir's got loads of contracts in our health service, in defence, probably in other parts of the government too. And many of us have worried for some time about how this American technology company, with links to Donald Trump, has got such a vested interest across our government. I think we need to ask a lot of questions. The government's got to be far more open than it's been.
LBC has approached Lord Mandelson for comment. There's more on this story on the LBC app. A teenager at a sixth form in Faversham is one of 2 people who've died following a meningitis outbreak. The other was a student at the University of Kent. 11 others are seriously ill in hospital, while some students in the Canterbury area are being given antibiotics. And employers will be paid £3,000 for every young person they hire who have been looking for a job for more than 6 months. Ministers want to bring down the rising number of people aged between 18 to 24 who are not in work, training or education. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 71 points at 10,333. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy across much of the UK, a band of rain moving in from the west, heavy at times in northwest Scotland, drier in southeast England, a high of 13 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Hi, I'm Claire, and last year I did my first big hike for Cancer Research UK. It was amazing. The scenery was stunning, the volunteers cheered us through it, and the free hot meal at the end was really what I needed. I did the full marathon hike. There's also a half marathon and a 10K if you don't fancy the big one.
Join thousands of hikers like Claire and escape to nature as you help to fund life-saving research. Search Big Hike today for 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello, good afternoon to you. I was watching the Prime Minister's and listening, of course, to the Prime Minister's speech this morning on energy bills, fuel costs, petrol costs, oil heating, and, of course, the latest on the war in Iran, but only when he was drawn on that by questions from journalists, particularly the question of whether he will respond positively, and he hasn't yet, to Donald Trump's call for Royal Navy assistance in the Strait of Hormuz to protect the free flow, because it's been very impacted, the free flow of shipping in the third busiest shipping channel on the planet. So far, Keir Starmer has made it very clear that the UK won't be drawn into what he calls a wider war over Iran. And on the Strait of Hormuz, he said, we're working with allies, including the United States, talked to Donald Trump yesterday, on a viable plan to reopen the Strait. Here's a little more of what Keir Starmer announced this morning.
I'm announcing immediate support for vulnerable heating oil customers today, providing £53 million for those households that are most exposed. We are pushing ahead with our long-term plan to build Britain's energy security and independence, because otherwise we will continue to be subject to wild fluctuations in oil and gas prices. We've already brought in £90 billion of investment in clean British energy. And that's enough to power the equivalent of over 20 million homes.
So here's the practical detail of what he said the government is already doing and new things it will do, particularly on heating oil. First, he says energy bills are capped to the end of June, saving the average household £170. That was announced a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it? He adds this is in addition to the £150 warm homes discount for the most vulnerable. If you currently get that, you will keep it. If you think you should get it and don't yet, maybe check. Second, he said the fuel duty cap on petrol has been extended until September. Many of you were calling for it to be, for the duty to be massively reduced immediately or significantly reduced immediately, but there's no sign of that happening. Third, he said Labour will support rural communities with the cost of heating oil. Many of you, it was the first thing that you did actually in light of this war starting, was ring and tell me about how your heating oil costs had gone through the roof very, very quickly indeed. So there is a package of support, but for the most vulnerable in rural communities. And he announced a £53 million support package for the most vulnerable households who rely on heating oil. Keir Starmer added that the UK will be pushing ahead with its long-term plan to build Britain's energy security through more renewable energy as well as oil and gas. So my question to you is, would you rather he did all these things and helped you with oil and petrol prices going up, or would you rather he sent the Navy to help America and maybe stop them going up in the first place? And that would certainly be alleviated if there was a more free flow of traffic in the Strait of Hormuz. But there's no sign of Keir Starmer saying yes to that yet. Professor Nick Butler is here to talk about more of the practicalities as well. Energy economist, visiting professor at King's College London and a former advisor to Downing Street on energy. Good afternoon to you, Professor Nick Butler. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon.
What did you make of what you heard from the Prime Minister this morning in terms of help? Does it sound about right, given the situation at the moment?
It's better than nothing. But I don't think it really deals with the seriousness of the situation which is developing in the Gulf. I think even if we do send minesweepers and clear the Gulf, which I believe we should, because it's in a national interest, I think we're still going to have a period which has already begun when tankers can't get through, and therefore a fifth of the world's supply of oil is going to be taken off the market. And it's very hard to replace that. The only country in the world that can substantially replace part of that is Russia. And I don't think we're going to give up on sanctions on Russia just yet. I think we have to realize that if this conflict goes on and if Hormuz remains closed, there is going to be a substantial physical shortage here. And that goes well beyond heating oil. It goes to everybody's use of oil and gas.
Whether that's in the home, in your car, other forms of transport.
And that's right. And in factories, in food supply, in hospitals, all those things depend on oil and gas. Now, Mr. Starmer talks about the long-term energy policy changes towards renewables, and that's fine, but the key word in that is long-term. It takes a long time. Oil and gas is still 80% of our daily energy consumption. And that is not going to change quickly because it's embedded in all the things that we use in our houses, in our factories, in our cars. That can't be changed overnight.
You suggested that rationing could be needed. How soon do you think rationing could be needed, even if the situation were to stay as it is now, and it is just as likely, I suppose, to worsen?
I think it is likely to worsen because every day means that normal supply is not getting
through. Dwindling,
yeah. I think the government, to avoid the risks of panic buying, which wouldn't help anybody, should now lay out a clear plan for what they're going to do. I think they have to protect the key sectors, the health service, food supply. When we had a tanker driver's dispute in the year 2000, those were the really vulnerable points. Mm. And I think the government has to take control of those supplies. And then it has to work out how it's going to handle the rest of the